Okay. I mean, do y'all mind if I do that? Just spend a few minutes talking here. Okay. Well, what actually happened as far as all of this? I do recognize that about the same time that Bobby preached his lesson, that Mike Willis was taking a very similar position. And I've had very little, if any, dealing with Mike. I had just a brief correspondence with him. Yes.
Mike is very slick in this discussion. Yeah. I had a discussion with Mike concerning this very thing. He's very, very slick and very, very political in this discussion.
Yes.
And he's very good and he's very trained at defending his position.
Dodger. But make sure that everything you've said to him has become a data point.
Oh, absolutely.
That they use to formulate.
Absolutely. Oh, probably
so. Of course he has.
Oh, probably
so. As a pretext for...
I'm sorry to
interrupt. Because you're getting to that point. You're getting to this. Everyone needs to understand that there is a party mentality that has been trained by debate mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And there are debate points that have to... The mindset over fellowship is related to that, and frankly, it has a lot to do with financial support. And so, if you line up in one party or the other, you're either in the money or you're out of the money.
That's right.
And
very true.
It is that it's the truth. You have to deal with that, really.
Follow the money.
You also have this party, the GOT party, in my opinion, I think there's plenty of indications for this, is an old boys club kind of thing, mm-hmm. where Mike is sort of the brains behind it, and he's quiet most of the time unless you dig him up and look for him, and you find out, you get what you get, you know, when you talk to him. But he really is sort of calling the shots, and there's big foundation money and also word of mouth support in churches, mm-hmm. that hangs upon what Mike says. So any doctrinal position, he comes to it with an educated view. I mean, he knows why he believes it. What I didn't understand about why he set out that sermon 10 or 11 years ago that has all of this in that, that has the all his pretext of teaching, why did he do that? And to me, I was talking to Dennis about this, and I think some of the others, we've mentioned it a little bit. We all have, in the process of preaching the gospel in a local work, marriage situations that come along. The eight things that are listed in Mike's might occasionally, once every 20 years, come along. You know, they couldn't really, because we all have a related story somewhere. We said, oh, it was just like that. But he went ahead and made this into a universal lesson that everyone needs to line up with, just in case, for what reason, I don't know. Maybe just to exert his power and authority over others. I don't know. Maybe it was a mistake that he put it out there like that. But to me, the view of this is more something that needs to always, these kind of problems need to be handled on the local level. They need to have the truth when you do apply it. But these guys sometimes hang up more on the debate points, the exactness of the debate point, and their idea of fellowship is that you're either in our gang or you're an infidel.
Yeah, that's right.
And so when it gets like that, and if you're an infidel, you don't get any support anymore, no financial support. It's over with. And so it gets personal because our livelihoods, or some here, their livelihood is connected to their position mm-hmm. on a doctrinal point. Mm-hmm. That you can either decide is actually the truth, or you're just going along to get along so that you can keep getting the checks. Mm-hmm. Now that actually is the core of the problem that comes from GOT. It's exerting power and authority over preachers. Sometimes it's been right, sometimes it's not.
And this is churches. The case.
Yes, and when we don't say where's the source of it, we're missing the point. The source is from that place. And so you got guys like Tom and Bobby are old GOT hands. They would like, they're on the outside looking in, actually, because they're not from the Ohio Valley area, which is a Christian church hotbed. And so the all the people that Louisville and all that area, Indiana, these people are have a tremendous history of Christian church sympathy that extends to Florida College, and the people, the teachers there, are from that region. Bobby and Tom are from Texas. They're not those kind of guys. But they want to be in it because the money's there, and they've always known that. And actually, GOT rose in opposition to FC anyway. That's its actual core origination. They believe it's okay to have an FC, but we can't go along with the teaching that goes on there. And so they have. But now this is, they're going off in their own direction. This is a man-made thing that is destroying people's faith. and it compels preachers, the little preachers, it don't really matter. They're out in the brotherhood. They don't really matter. We're the ones at GOT.
I'm out of here. I don't really matter. I'm out of here.
That was
Mark Smith saying, we don't matter. So.
Everybody knows his voice. I can't
mistake Mark Smith. To my grandchildren, I'm mad.
Now, on one point for Mike. His argument is that he did not disseminate that sermon outline. It was he had left this congregation where he was preaching, and the preacher who came in behind him happened to see that sermon outline and then sent it out. And he said, "Now, Chip, what sermon outline of yours would somebody not have a point to question on?"
Hey, I mean, you can disseminate anything I preach.
And
in fact, I do.
And if I'm wrong, I'll say I was wrong.
Every sermon I preach,
what he told me.
Well, that's pathetic.
I don't like that.
And this is some of his slickness and his politicking of the whole situation. So that's part of where he comes from.
It wouldn't surprise me that Tom and Bobby are worried about the direction GOT is going generally, but they still want to play ball with them. And they don't have any friends in DFW because everybody else is DeBowman and FC people.
Yeah.
And Houston's
all these other opposing camps.
So you've got a quiet split that's happened in the Brotherhood, and there's very few GOT people really left in Texas. And they're looking around, and maybe one of the reasons they wanted to get with us is they kind of respect the fact that we still stand for the truth. They took a roll call who's down here in these meetings. They probably know exactly who comes. And they say, yeah, those guys are all, they're all kind of not out, they're not inside the loop. You know, they're we can't control them. And they respect it in a way because it's kind of like old-time preachers a long time ago were. They just preached the gospel. The New Testament, I work for Jesus Christ, not for the organizations of man. And that's a different view than people normally have today.
So let's stand. Go ahead.
I'm not worried. These things we need to discuss. Now, Steve has had a correspondence with Mike, so I don't talk much about or have much interaction with Mike about this. But with regard to Bobby and Tom, I just want to make note of a couple of things. Number one, it was basically in the latter part of 2005 that Bobby preached his sermon. The reason why he did was because Kelly Wilson had gotten up while he was gone and preached a lesson on the subject of divorce, where he took the position that and I haven't heard that lesson, but this is according to Bobby then, that if a woman, for example, leaves the home because she's being abused, that she would be sinning. And there is a bunch of things going on with the discussion with Bobby and Kelly.
Isn't
Bobby preached his sermon.
To abuse his wife?
I don't know anything about that. And believe me, with Kelly, there's no friendship.
Well, that's why I understand.
I think that's
it's really scary. I'll try.
Perhaps so, but in regard to that, Bobby answered that. But in answering it, he advocated the position that he holds concerning multiple causes for divorce. In the sermon he preached, he has said to me in a Bible study in December of 2010 that he put it poorly, but he said that there are basically two laws with regard to marriage. One that has reference to divorce and remarriage, wherein there is one exception, which is fornication, and then there is a second law that God had concerning marriage that doesn't have reference to remarriage. And there is a general principle here to where there could be other reasons. Now, they'll make a distinction between reasons and causes, but there are other reasons that a person can divorce as long as they don't remarry. And by the way, as late as December 2010, he would include, for example, the viewing of pornography. That's a specific example that Tom came up with.
It's
progressive thing.
Yeah.
And it just
But Bobby, in his sermon, though, he was saying, in effect, if you're precluded from serving God, that that would be just cause to divorce for the sake of the kingdom. The interesting thing about it, he didn't use Luke 18. He used 1 Corinthians 7. Didn't use Luke 18, but he did. But in fact, I'm the one, first one to use Luke 18, and I did it inappropriately. And I've since acknowledged that and said I went too far. That was in the very first.
But it shows
first thing that I wrote to
you're
Bobby.
The one.
Believe me, I'm not happy about it. Now, I'm not saying others hadn't used that, but in discussion with Bobby, I'm the one that brought it up. And the reason why is because he was my Paul. And I went to him saying, I don't think that we're this far apart. I think we can come to an agreement.
And let me interject that they kept on using that point, even in our discussion about, well, Stan agreed and now things have changed.
Yeah, viewing that I have. That I was in agreement with them, now not what happened.
Right.
And that wasn't it at all. And the argument that I use in that regard is, I wouldn't have come to you if I was in agreement. I critiqued his sermon, and I was looking for a way to find some common ground. Mm-hmm. And I misused Luke 18.
And why are they talking to Steve about what Stan believes? What does that have to do with the price of tea?
Well, what happened was is that after that had happened, I met Bobby, and Bobby gave me the sermon.
My sermon that I preached. Talking about mine.
Well, that's right.
At the lectureship, he said, "Look what Stan's done to me." Remember, is what he put here. That is something that affects. Yeah. But yeah, it's not. Yeah,
what does that have to do with?
Did he give you his sermon too?
Yeah, okay. He's the one who gave me his sermon as well. And then I would love to listen.
But that is about who agrees with who. So
and I understand that's neither here nor there.
And the reason that was important because I mean, he married both Betty and myself, and Betty had been taught on him for ever since
Bobby.
He was a little child. Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Ever since he was a teenager.
Yeah.
So it was pretty
long time. And so she's really strong.
Well, as a result of this, Kelly Wilson, who had some discussions with me on other circumstances. I'm the one that suggested he go and place his membership at Northside. Because when he left Westside in Irving, he went to Farm Terrace, Grand Prairie. Didn't like what Dan Vess is doing. Had a problem with him on the subject of church discipline. So I said, well, you know, Northside and Mansfield, that's where he and Sue went to attend. And then this came up. So he's telling me, Bobby's teaching this. And I said, first of all, no, he's not. You're misunderstanding. No, he is. Then he sent me the lesson. They left and came to Westside and placed membership at Westside. In that interim, since I heard his lesson, I studied with him on two different occasions, gave him two packets of materials to consider. The elders and I studied with him twice. At the end of it, we could not come to an agreement with regard to his teaching, so we determined that we would no longer support him in his work because we were financially supporting him. The elders told me to prepare a lesson for the congregation to let them know why. Because he was well respected and well loved in Westside, still is.
Which is reasonable.
And so that's why I preach my sermon. I preach my sermon, in this case, without the intent of it being disseminated. I have absolutely no problem with anything I taught in it. I believe it to be true and I will defend it. But when it comes to, you know, Stan is calling me a heretic and Stan has marked me and look what he's done to me, I spoke to the congregation and the congregation alone.
And you didn't say I marked Bobby.
No, no, I never did mark him in that. I basically said I believe he's teaching error.
Yeah.
And I've always felt with regard to the process of marking a false teacher that the first time you express a disagreement or see a doctrinal difference, you don't immediately brand him. Mm-hmm. You go and talk to him and study him. And I felt at that point in time, even when I preached this lesson, that, you know, he's teaching error. This is the error he's teaching. I respect him as a person. I respect his character and integrity. And I'm willing to continue to study with him in the hope that we can come together. But we cannot in good conscience continue to support him as long as he's teaching this erroneous doctrine. That's where I went with it. And of course, in his view, I marked him. In the view of some at Westside who were already marketing, I marked him by what I said. But I never used the term false teacher in the lesson. It was not my intent at that point in time to say you're a false teacher in the sense of it's set. Because I didn't know whether he was completely set in the matter. I do think now he's set in the matter.
I think he is too.
But that's neither here nor there. So what happened was, we made a statement. I preached my sermon. We made a statement to the congregation. We wrote a letter to Bobby. telling him that we were ceasing our support of him because of what he taught. It has been since said that the only reason why, and Tom made this reference in a letter he wrote, the only reason that we, with Westside, now Stan's doing this, but the elders weren't in with him. And that's inaccurate. And I just wanted just to read a little section. He says, this is the letter we wrote to him. After our meeting with you and our discussion of the lesson you preached at the Northside congregation, it's evident we have differences with regard to the exegesis of several passages, as well as what the scriptures teach on the subject of divorce. While we remain ready and willing to continue any study with you on such matters, unfortunately these differences have the potential to cause conflict within the Westside congregation. In our role as shepherds of the congregation, we feel it best to protect the church by taking this step. And so, again, the reason for the deal, the reason why we stopped supporting him. The same thing is indicated in the statement that the elders read to the church. It had nothing to do with the fact that we couldn't afford it anymore. We couldn't afford it anymore, but that's not why we did it. And I tell you, there's a secondary thing about this, and that is that Greg Madden, I believe his name was, at the same time we were supporting Bobby, we were supporting Greg, and Greg was criticizing Bobby. Yeah, so we had two individuals we were supporting taking opposite positions, and then we found that to be untenable. And so we studied the issue and studied it with Bobby, and found we disagreed with Bobby, so we stopped supporting him. So if you hear people say at any time that the reason why we stopped supporting Bobby was not because of what he taught, but because of the financial aspect, that's inaccurate and I've got the documentation to prove it.
Devil does his homework.
Do what?
Devil does his homework.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I mean that was the contention that was made. And Bobby knows it's not true because of the okay. Well, in addition to that, there was an article that was written in June of 2006 by, and this is actually in your packet, by the way, the article as well as the correspondence that I had with Ron Halbrook.
That's good.
I'm not sure if it's in the, you know, where in it is, but yeah, there's the article. Yeah, and right behind the article will be the correspondence I had with Ron.
Okay.
Now, I just want you to understand again, this is one of the reasons why I have a problem with GOT. The introductory note, it's a personal letter I wrote to a dear brother and friend who has made great sacrifices through years to serve the Lord and spread the gospel. There's not an ounce of doctrinal liberalism or compromise in him, but nonetheless, he's been deeply wounded by a friend who has declared him a heretic. This is May of 2006.
Yeah.
Okay, and he was gone actually in April through May. So this was the first part of 2006, mm-hmm. which is shortly after we had done what we did. In January 2006 is when we sent Bobby the letter. Okay. So he says, this is not the first time I've seen this dear brother and friend wounded in this way, and I learned... Okay, the other thing, in the middle of that first paragraph, he has been deeply wounded by a friend who's declared him a heretic, which I didn't learn. Okay, the loss of financial support is not as painful as the thrusts of a fellow worker kind of severe. So he lost financial support as a result of it. Now, I know that there's not a whole lot of people that are going to say, ooh, he's talking about Bobby and Stan, but there are some that will, and some that have, and say, wow, you know. So Ron wrote this letter. He wrote it to Bobby, but he's not willing to accept, to admit that he did.
To admit that he did.
He's
not
willing to.
Letter, but it's really to Bobby.
He's, yeah, and again, I'll let you, on your time, read the entirety of the letter and such, but and the correspondence that I had with Ron, but I do want to just make note of what Ron has 16 pages. Ron writes.
How many pages?
16 pages of correspondence. Mainly Ron, but he writes as long as he preaches. But anyway, if you do have the correspondence on page 5 of the correspondence, I asked him.
Sorry.
Well, I told first in my first letter I said, why'd you write this about me? Why'd you write it? If you want to write a personal letter, fine. Why'd y'all publish it?
No.
Because it really shows me in a bad light. And, no. And Bobby's side of it's not exactly right about it.
Page 5.
Page 5?
Yeah, page 5 in the material. It's a different, you've got a different one.
Listen,
yeah, we'll say it at the top of the email correspondence with Ron Halbrook.
There you go.
Okay, page 5 in the second paragraph. He said, I did not personalize the June 15th article for Truth Magazine and will not do so now. So he didn't answer my question, or he didn't admit to the fact that he had written it about me.
first point. So I specifically asked him in my second email to him.
What page?
This is page 10.
Not 5.
Yeah, the 5 was the first one. It's just that one little statement that I didn't personalize it, nor will I do so now. Okay?
Okay.
So on page 10, the third paragraph on my my response to Ron Halbrook, which is right in the middle of the page, I said, I will ask you directly, was the personal letter you wrote, which is dated May 9, 2006, written to Bobby or not? If it is, I will say to you that this representation of the matter is not correct. Okay? So, I'll leave it up to y'all. Now go to page 12. I'll go to y'all to determine whether or not it was, because he didn't answer me. This is his final statement, the bottom of page 12, origin of my article. I've already explained my focus in publishing the article. It never occurred to me that someone would ask whether it referred to a certain local situation. Well, he said, I wrote this to a specific brother.
Yeah.
Okay? I said, if you and others from your area might ask, it's equally possible that people from other areas might ask, because the problem is increasingly prevalent among us. That is a factional attitude, factional intent. Therefore, if anyone asks, my answer will be that it was not published to address any one situation, but to caution brethren generally regarding against the danger of factional trends and tendencies. If someone sees an appropriate application in a given situation, let him make the application. If another reader sees no point of application, then of course he will not make the application. For now, that should be my answer to one and all, including yourself. So he was unwilling to say.
That sounds like Ron.
Well, see, it's irritating. If you wrote it to him, own up to it.
Yeah.
If you didn't, then tell me. And yes. So, okay, well, I was mistaken, then you didn't write it.
Like politics.
It's politics.
He did it. He wrote it to Bobby. It's very obvious that he wrote it to Bobby.
It's politics.
We should look into it. Okay,
well,
so
this is what Chip earlier said, that Mike said to him, well, it was those were a sermon outline, and wouldn't somebody have a problem with your... That's immaterial. The question is, do you defend these points or not?
Yeah.
Exactly.
This is the same thing. It's just a dodge. It's a very well-educated dodge.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, now... a couple of other things. Let me see what the... I'm trying to go kind of chronologically with regard to the dates of these things. Yeah. The next one would be the debate. It had to have been the early part of 2007. I had a study with Tom. And again, the significant thing about this is because he's presenting it to Jerry and the elders as being not something we're pressing, and we have open minds about it. Very early in our discussion, in my private study with Tom, he took the position, or he challenged me to debate. Wanted me to debate orally at West Side and North Side. Okay, let's have an oral debate. Which, again, his desire is to maintain his influence in West Side, and it would have been destructive to the congregation. I told him no. I'm not. I mean, it would split the church. So it would split the church. There's some members that have enough love for the man above the word there at West Side, and we tried to deal with that. But there's some of that there, and it would have caused problems.
Still is.
I don't think they even recognize it in themselves, but I can see it myself. So anyway, I told him no, but I would have a written debate. Okay. We let it go for a while. He didn't hear anything from him. Then Mike is the one that for the 2008 lectures. Wanted me to appear on the 2008 forum, open forum, to be in the positive of must we divide on every issue? Which again, that's here in this this correspondence with Mike Willis, which is in your packet, and it says, inasmuch as you seem to be drawing a line of fellowship on the issue of divorce for any cause other than fornication, as manifested by sermons from your pulpit and withdrawal of financial support from those who believe that a woman being beaten may obtain a civil protection of legal divorce. Though all agree she could not remarry, we would like to invite you to participate in the open forum, which is entitled Must We Divide Over Every Issue. Okay. My response, and again, this is the view that I've taken with regard to all these. I'm not going to give them any fodder. You know, talking about, so my response was, thank you for your invitation. However, I will not attend the lecture series in 2008. That's all I said. So his response was, since you're not attending the lessons, will you address the issue in exchange? That's on page 2. I said yes. Okay? So, I'm trying to go through this quick, but I want you to notice at the top of page 3, the proposition that they wanted me to sign. This is a proposition that was worded by Mike. The scriptures teach that a woman may depart from her husband without sin if she cannot live faithfully to God in that marriage.
so long as she remains unmarried or is reconciled to her husband.
Mm-hmm. What does the part mean?
No.
You had to define the term.
No. All right. I didn't like it either.
No, and I said, no, absolutely not.
And there were a couple of things. I won't go into detail, but if you'll notice, page four in the middle, my objections to the proposition. One, it's not gender neutral, so it's an emotional appeal if a woman can't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I said, get rid of the woman. The term depart is ambiguous. Tom's affirming the right of the individual to divorce his or her mate, and so the word divorce should be in the proposition. Mm-hmm. And then the third one, as the proposition is written, it would have me affirming in reverse that a woman would have to stay in a marriage even if it means the forfeit of her soul. And I don't believe that.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the position I do take makes that as a logical consequence. So I said, mm-hmm. I can't, as worded, I can't affirm that. Mm-hmm. Well, they took the gender neutrality. I mean, they made it gender neutral, a person, instead of a woman. And they didn't make any other changes. So time had passed. And on page 5, in November of 2007... by the way, one other thing is, Tom wanted me to sign, and I know why he did it. He wanted me to sign a statement, both of us to sign a statement, that this isn't a matter of fellowship.
Oh, I bet he would. Wow.
But the reason why is because he wanted me on record is refusing.
Exactly.
You know, so I'm the one causing the division.
You're the factionalist.
He's the one that always says who splits the law. Okay, so that, again, I just want y'all to see kind of what I've been dealing with throughout all this. These are side issues, and I understand it. But anyway, so I said, you know, no, you got to have debate in it. You have to have divorce in the proposition. Okay, page 6. This is Tom Roberts' final post on page 6. And it's his second paragraph down towards the bottom part of the page is the post, but the second paragraph on it. He says, I cannot agree to the changes in the proposition because of the modern ideas about divorce. It's too ambiguous to discuss that. I tried to use a Bible definition as the basis for the proposition. It is rejected by Stan. And I didn't reject it. I told him you need to argue it. You know, in other words, I'm not going to stipulate to your definition of divorce. You need to establish that in the debate. But anyway, he said, I don't see any way around it. So Tom is the one that backed down on it. And my this is in December of 2007. And then my final post at the bottom of page 7 is I'm writing a short email to acknowledge Tom's unwillingness to continue. Okay?
Fair enough.
All right. So that was kind of the end of that until Tom held a meeting at Granbury. It was Granbury, wasn't it?
Mm.
It was Granbury.
Mm.
Didn't Tom hold a meeting in Granbury? No,
he's held a meeting in Granbury.
And I think I've already told you this, is that when and this has been like with 2008. Fall 2008, he held a meeting in Granbury. And again, at that point in time, as far as I understand it, it was during that meeting that you sat down on the couch with Tom and y'all had the discussion. So Chip wasn't aware of all this. Which again, I think is a sign. I wasn't spreading it around, because if so, I would have talked to Chip about it. You know, try to look at Chip. But anyway, the meeting announcement came from Granbury with Tom.
That's when you threw us under the bus.
So Jerry Gallman was doing the announcements, and he announced the meeting. I didn't hang it up. But it was in the elders' box.
You know that connection.
I know. I understand all that kind of stuff. But it was in the elders' box, and Jerry took it. And Jerry is a friend of Tom's. Yeah, Jerry announced.
Very close. He's not an elder.
Jerry is an elder.
He is an elder.
Mm-hmm. And he has told me that his intent was not an endorsement of it, but in that recognition again that there are some who still hold their affection for Tom and would want to go. He announced it. Well, that put me in an untenable position when he did. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting here about to preach, and they just announced a meeting with Tom, and everyone knows what.
Blue.
And you've still got Kelly Wilson and Sue there, as well as Dick Hatch and others, who are just, every time they hear anything about this, it causes trouble. So I got up and I said, Tom preaches the same thing that Bobby does, and because of that, I cannot in good conscience attend the meeting.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
So I sat down.
That was you.
That was me.
Yeah.
And that's all that I said at that point.
Fair enough.
And told me you did that.
Yeah, yeah. And right after I did and preached, I made a beeline to the back of the building before the final prayer was even said, because Jerry was in the lobby. And I told Jerry I'd done it. Jerry Gallman, man who made the announcements.
That's right.
And I told him, I said, you know, I was conscious about to do it. And he said, no problem. So I don't have a problem with it. Well, told the other
sermon about cell phones in church.
Yeah. Told one of the other elders, P.A. Foster, the same thing. They didn't have a problem with what I did. Okay? All right, so that gets me to the last side issue about all this, and that is Tom Roberts' letter that he wrote to the congregation.
Okay.
It starts out, I was recently informed that you marked me publicly as a false teacher from the pulpit at Westside. I didn't hear it from you, but secondhand, to say that I was shocked and dismayed by that action is putting it lightly.
No, it's electronic. No, it's
so and so forth. So, and again, I don't want to give you copies of this because I don't hesitate. Y'all can read it if you'd like to, but I just didn't want the copies. Okay, so this was after our study because he knew I disagreed with him. But he again called this a marking, and I told you exactly what I said. So you can check that as well. I didn't intend it to be a marking, but again, that acknowledgement that they taught the same thing.
Maybe we need to reset. There's a reset.
Okay.
Reset button.
I understood that one of the elders at Westside made a public announcement that it was not the intention of Westside to mark any area preachers, but you have directly contradicted the statement. And that was Jerry Gallman who basically said, no, we didn't mark Bobby. When some said that we had. No, we haven't. That wasn't our intent. It was just, you know, explain why we were doing what we were doing. But it raises a question in my mind, if you're really accepting the authority of the elders to speak for Westside, or do you decide independent of their decisions what Westside does and who do they fellowship? He continues to indicate that, now I want you to hear this part too. In addition to all this, is the concern I have for my fellowship with the church at Westside. 72 to 70, about 80, 81 maybe, he was the preacher there. So 81, that's it. And then they went into Woodmont, then he's been all over. His fellowship with the church at Westside. I've had good relationships with brethren with whom I admire and trust the sound of faith. As error has divided so many brethren from the nation in our area, it's been a joy to witness the soundness of Westside through the years. I have no desire to lose my fellowship with Westside, regardless of your actions.
Thank you, dear.
And I plan to send a copy of the letter to the elders at Westside so they may keep abreast of a situation that I feel is tragic and completely unnecessary. So,
what about his fellowship with the Lord? Sorry.
Huh?
What about his fellowship with the Lord? That's what he needs to be worried about.
I understand.
He's worried about support.
This is all about
personal. That's what he's concerned about.
Oh, and in the letter also, he indicated concerning Bobby. He said, you told me clearly in your office that the support of Bobby Holmes was stopped because of the error he taught. Again, this is not in agreement with the statement of the elders. They told me. If there were only two elders at the time, and P.A. Foster never met with Bobby. I'm not trying to throw Jerry under the bus. Don't misconstrue that, because I think Jerry's just had a little bit of confusion and things about this. But again, he did not have a meeting with the elders.
He's easily confused.
He didn't have a meeting with the elders. They told me that the budget required some cutbacks, and Bobby's support had to be cut back because of the lack of funds. I was also told they did not intend to mark Bobby Holmes when you preached your sermon on the errors of Bobby Holmes, but you told me you intended to mark Bobby, which I did not. That's outright lie. When you preached the sermon and did in fact mark him at the time, I did not say that.
So that's an emotional deal. Yeah.
I get one story from you and another from the elders. The problem with this is that could have got me in trouble with the elders.
That was his intention.
And of course, so what I did was, as soon as I got that letter, as I did the research, I went back and got the statement, got the sermon, got the, you know, went and put all my P's and Q's in order and talked to the elders. And the elders basically said, no, we don't have a problem with that. And Jerry said, I told Tom that you didn't do anything that I disagreed with or do anything on your own. So anyway, that failed. Now, I wrote a letter back to him, very noncommittal, but said basically your information is erroneous. What you say here is not true. The elders and I are completely on board with all of it. Have not to this day received any apology or acknowledgement that he was in error in what he said.
There you go. That's the key.
There's not been anything forthcoming in that regard.
That's the key of it.
Okay, so that's basically, those are the side issues. But I want you to understand from this is that because Bobby is still doing that, I mean, Tom is still doing that, that when if we get together and have this study with Tom and Bobby, you know, it could have some implications mm-hmm. and some ramifications for me yeah. in a local setting. Mm-hmm. And so at least from that, maybe you can see why it's tearing me up. You know, it's just really a difficult situation because, you know, for my family's sake and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, the only other thing that I want to make note of are issue related, okay? And those are both in here as well. Tom's scenario and then the discussion that I had with Bobby.
Right.
Okay? Now again, Tom, in this last study with Jerry Fite and the elders of Pasadena in January of 09, seemed to be backing off on some things. They, at the very end of that study together, he was talking about all they're saying is that that the woman can appeal to Caesar if she's being abused. And Tom actually went so far as saying that he believes there is only one cause for divorce, and that's sexual immorality. And within the actual discussion, he was contradicting himself. But at least that's where they left it, and that's why Jerry and the elders continued to support give Bobby support. I don't know if they support Tom at all, but they do give Bobby support. And Jerry is at present concerned about it because of some things that we've discussed and that probably is going to be revisited by the Pasadena congregation. But I want you to notice Tom's scenario, because he sent this actually to Jerry Gallman. Tom's scenario, and basically it was something that he was willing to sign as a statement leaning toward understanding, and he signed it actually. I don't have the actual copy, I think Jerry has it, but he signed it, and there was, you know, slots underneath where we could sign it as well. In the case of physical and moral abuse, where a Christian woman sees her children exposed to violence by her husband that endangers their lives and immorality which endangers their soul, the Christian woman can scripturally sunder, depart from her husband for the kingdom of heaven's sake. Okay, now Tom said in that 2009 meeting that he, and I don't know when this scenario came up, but it was before that, the 2000 meeting with Jerry and them, that he no longer holds to this. But anyway, in the private study I had with Tom, the scenario specifically with regard to moral abuse that came up was, Stan, if a man brings pornography into his household and shows it to his kids, are you saying the woman has to stay with him? And my answer was yes. That she would, what her responsibility of that is stated in 1 Peter chapter 3, that she is to win the unbeliever without a word by her conduct and chastity, and that God has given us instructions on how she should handle that situation. And he said, I don't believe it. She would have the right to divorce him for the sake of the kingdom in that scenario. And that's why I brought these questions up. What about if, would viewing pornography on a computer be sufficient? Not that showing the kids, but that he's doing it. What about watching R-rated movies with the kids? What if he's cussing in front of the kids? Because the thing was, you know, the filth, the man's filth that the kids were having to witness it. And so I don't see the difference, really. I understand the difference between pornography and profanity, but again, that would be another form
of
filth.
It's the corruption of the children.
This is where the problem comes in, is when they say, oh, all we mean is what y'all actually practice, and you'll hear that time and time again with Tom and Bobby. All we're saying to do, we're just using different words, and it's just a matter of, you know, different terms and all, but we're saying the same thing. In reality, when you get down to applications, you've got Max 8, which not only includes some of these, but also would include
spending too much money.
As an example of that. And again, they've distanced themselves somewhat from it. Initially, Bobby said, all those are ridiculous. They're flippant examples.
Bobby said that in the beginning.
But he said, I have a problem with it. I have a problem with Mike. Then he and Tom in the discussion that I had with the elder, or a discussion that I was present at, as well as the elders at Westside, him and Tom basically said they'd agreed with Mike, but they felt like he made a mistake in bringing up the scenario. In other words, it was a tactical error, but they didn't have any problem with what he taught. In January of 2009, talking with Jerry, he said that while I was defending Mike back in Waco in the first discussion, I no longer feel that way. Okay? And I want to make those acknowledgments because I'm kind of curious exactly where Tom would go from this point on, because I know that while Bobby was there and saying the same, that in a later study Bobby had with me, he did defend that. And that's what I'm about to show you. Okay? So I do want you to understand, though, that this is a scenario. And by the way, with regard to all these things, even if Tom no longer believes it, he hadn't told me. I mean, you know, in other words, he hadn't told anybody except for Jerry and the others there if there is any acknowledgement that they have taught anything wrong. Because they have been with a lot of people. Steve, he's never told you he's changed any view, and you know, the elders up in...
He talks to me no more.
Yeah, well, but it makes me wonder, this is where I really do have a problem, and I've always had such love and respect for the character of both Bobby and Tom, and I'm loath to suggest anything untoward in that regard, but the only individuals that there have been any acknowledgments made is the ones that have given them money. I mean, I hate to say that. It just drives me crazy.
It's awful.
Can I interject something real quickly? I can't remember when I held a meeting in Rosenberg. I don't remember the year, quite frankly, but it was not long. That was that year. Yeah, when we talked, that was the first time. I don't know what year that was. But
probably 2007.
Right, okay.
Because you're 2000.
Okay. You know very well that they thought I was in their camp. You do know that, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I didn't know I was not in their camp, but I was listening just to see what they were saying. That, you know, it's silly how people... I mean, I can listen to anyone. That doesn't mean I agree with you just because I listen to you. That doesn't mean that at all. But anyway, besides that, but we have a long history.
Sure.
Okay. Now, but the thing that was disturbing to me is that when I went to Rosenberg, I preached a lesson on marriage, you know, is it for life, period. You know, that's the lesson I preached. Well, Darren Henry, deacon at there in Alvin, he calls me up. And he was very upset with me. Very upset. Then you had an opportunity. You could set everything straight. You could have set them all straight. You could have preached the truth on this matter. I said, and what truth might that be, brother? He said, well, Luke 18:29, of course. I said, what about Luke 18:29, brother? Now, this is their protege. You understand that they're teaching people. That's what I'm saying. And that brother, he as much as said to me, well, all I know is this, and I just hope my wife never does anything that would cause me to have to put her away for the cause of the kingdom. Good luck with that. Do you see that's the end result of the teaching, and the teaching is being done, or that brother wouldn't come to that conclusion. Now, I know that people take any of our sermons and twist them.
They go to the bottom line, though.
Give me the bottom line.
I'm allowed to, but he said have to.
Yeah, have to. That's what he said. He said I would have to put away for the kingdom. I'd have to do it. And see, that's the conclusion that comes to on this. I just want to point out that this is more than just a discussion between Stan and them. This is something they have involved themselves with many people, many members of the church, and these people are being skewed with a lie, with error. So that's my sense.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm almost finished, by the way, guys, and then we can go beyond it. Go to page 2 on my discussion with Bobby. I would like to... one of the things I want you to understand is it's less with Tom, but with Bobby. I feel that Bobby does not have a full grasp of the issue.
I agree.
There's an emotional content.
It was an amazing thing to me that through all of it, that there was a point in this area when he said, that's what I believe. And I said, well, I don't believe that. He said, you don't believe that? Like, it was the first time that I had expressed that.
Or, how dare you?
It's like, well, it's like it was shocked that we weren't in agreement on the matter. Like,
he's your mentor.
And he just doesn't understand the arguments that I've been making and all. But he wrote me an email. The reason why we had this study in December of 2010 is because he wrote me an email saying, Stan, we need to get together. I said, I've changed my views on this. I've changed my teaching on it. And I believe that the only cause accepted by God for divorce is sexual immorality. I said to myself, well, that's what I believe too.
Now let's leave.
Let's get together and let's discuss this. So we got together for the purpose of discussing it. And so go to page 2 on it. And you know, the first section of our study, and this, by the way, is not the entire transcript. It's just some things. I didn't have time to transcribe, and I don't know if I will, because it's so much of it is not really, it's just fluff. But, you know, he's Bobbing didn't argue from what is putting away or what the definition of putting away is. That's something that came later. It came from Tom later. It didn't come from Bobbing. And that's what Ron Halbert teaches with regard to his position, and they take basically the same position that the civil decree is completely separate from the repudiation of the marriage. They have nothing to do with each other, so on and so forth. And then they use that to justify what they're saying. Now, I think, and I told Bobby this, I told Tom this, I told Harry Osborne, I told half a dozen others this over and over again. Okay, I'm not willing to stipulate what you believe, but let's say we stipulate what you believe. It doesn't change the fact that you're saying there's more than one reason for it. In other words, how many causes are there? And that's what we got to in the second part of our study. Now, I'm kind of getting to that here on page 2. When Bobby acknowledged, towards the bottom of the page, it's this section right here, I told him what you said in your email and what you're telling me now is different, you know. And he said, well, that's because of lack of clarifying and studying things properly. Mm-hmm. I didn't go into detail like I should have. I should have added and remarry. Mm-hmm. Well, we've always known he believed that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I know that he says the only cause to divorce and remarry, the only exception is, mm-hmm. is sexual immorality. Everybody agrees with that. This isn't the issue of our discussion. Right. But he led me to believe that he had changed, mm-hmm. number one. Now there is an earlier earlier point that he makes where I asked him whether he, and it's in here somewhere, I asked him whether he changed his view on the matter. I may not put it in this section, maybe another part of it. And he said, no, but it's been misunderstood. Have you changed your teaching on there? He said, no, but it's been misunderstood. So that is there, and I can get it if it's not in here. Okay, so he said he should have added the word remarry. So this is what I told him. I said, you know, I see a contradiction in what you're saying. What you're saying is, I don't believe one has the scriptural right to put away their mate except for fornication. And then you say, I believe in a circumstance or situation where a person can put away their mate if they must do so to serve God. Well, those are two contradictions. Saying you can't except for fornication, but you can if it's to serve God. That's a contradiction. Logical contradiction. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I said, what I don't think is a contradiction to say, and I believe that I was putting his position, and this is the very last clause on page 2, and this is me talking. I don't believe it's a contradiction to say, a logical contradiction, I believe in a certain circumstance you can put away your mate in order to serve God as long as you don't remarry, but the only cause with remarriage is fornication. And that's exactly what I believe. So I encapsulated what he believes is, mm-hmm. with remarriage, the only exception, mm-hmm. is fornication. Mm-hmm. But he does believe you can put away for other reasons, for mm-hmm. the sake of the kingdom.
As long as you don't remarry.
Yeah. And again, with regard to this, just keep in mind, this is after their study with Jerry in January. It's almost 2 years afterwards. Okay, so I bring up at the bottom of page 3, I bring up the scenario that Tom had brought up concerning pornography in the home. Okay, look here at this writing starting right here. Okay, on page 3.
Gotcha.
This is me. I found some scenarios that have been brought up objectionable, including Mike's and the one that Tom brought up. That if pornography is brought in the home, he asked me, Stan, do you not believe that he would have the right to put him away, and that she would have the right to put him away in that situation? Bobby, when I said that, said, put him away. Okay. And I said, no, I don't believe she would have the right to put him away. I think that 1 Peter 4, and I meant 1 Peter 3, but I said chapter 4, indicates what a wife should do with the unbelieving husband. I understand it's difficult for the kids. The kids are in a home. The pornography is present. I understand it's not a good situation. And then Bobby wanted to clarify what he meant when he said put him away. He said, I want you to understand, I'm not saying stay in a situation like that. She would have the right to get out of the home, get out of the marriage, rather than subject and submit herself to him and subject her children to that filth. I'm saying I think she could. I want you to understand me clearly. But I don't think she has to remain in the situation like that. You may think she does, that she does. I don't.
But so since when does get out of the home equal get out of the marriage?
Well, his view it does. And that's where, and you'll see that as you go in, in through the discussion. He says that as soon as she gets out, that's done. And I don't want to do all of these things because I want you to have the opportunity to read. But you go to page 7 and it answers your question. Page 7, top of the page, first thing that Bobby says. So we're getting into the significant differences that we have in this matter. Notice the very first of Bobby's very first statement on page 7. I don't believe that because marriage is a rule, I don't believe that. What I'm saying is that you can leave the house without leaving the marriage. Okay? And that's previous from page 6. You can see it. So that's answering Andrew's point of this. I said you can leave the house, get out of a situation that's dangerous without leaving the marriage. He said, I don't believe that. This is why. Because marriage is a relationship between a man and a woman to share bed, board, and life together. That's ended because of the threat to their life. The bond is there, but the marriage is over. Until there can be reconciliation of some kind, just like the couple you described, he changed medications, things, after a while he was able to go back, the marriage goes on. That's a scenario I brought up. At the particular time that she was out of it, the marriage was over, it ended. They were no longer sharing bed, board, and life together, it was over. So his view, and it's something he's consistent in this regard, there was a specific couple that he was aware of the situation. They were members at Northside for a while. They came to Westside, different group than Kelly and Sue and them. But this was a very troubled couple. Callie and...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Many of you are aware of that.
Very troubled.
Situation. Okay.
Very
so troubled. Very troubled. Tim.
So Tim. Kelly and Tim.
Tim. Yeah. Kelly and Tim.
Right. So y'all are aware of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're trying to referee the situation. Physical abuse on both parts, and Callie could give as good as she got. But they were in this type of situation. It was being physical. I suggested that she get out of the house until they could work some things out.
Reasonable.
And as they're going through this process, we meet at the building, the West Side building, because she was afraid to go back in the home, and we were going to make sure that we could. We brought Tim down there and said, you know, I want you to stay with me until she gets the things that she needs. And as a result of all this going on, Tim almost threw a punch at me, but I mean, he was mad. He was angry. He lost his temper. He took his wedding ring off, said, that's it. I'm through with her. No more. Threw the wedding ring across the parking lot. His mom was there. She later went and got it, but he threw it away. Threw the wedding ring away and jumped in his car. And I said, Bobby, and this was not in this study, it was in a previous study I had with him. I said, Bobby, if your position is true, is that he divorced her right there. He put her away right there.
And that they were that's wrong. That's very consistent, yes.
And he agreed.
And he agreed?
It's a logical, but that's his position. Now I don't think it's a position Mike takes. I don't think it's a position Tom takes, but that is the position that Bobby takes now. Okay. So that gets me to the final point. Okay. And okay.
So from what I understand, it has to be not only a threat to the life or something, but also an intent to
in the intent to say I'm leaving the home,
right?
I'm repudiating our relationship. Mm-hmm. That in itself, God, that is a divorce, and God recognizes it, and they are unmarried. And he goes on and says, 1 Corinthians 7:10, he uses that as his example because they are to remain unmarried. That when she leaves. And he takes that as a physical departure.
So you have mental marriage as well as mental divorce. Oh. That was true.
Yeah. Divorce or remain. And when she comes back into the home, they're married again.
What kind of craziness would that
be? Unmarried, married, unmarried, married. Without any civil aspect or anything. In other words, to be the reconciliation, they're married. So they're not married, they're married.
It can't be.
All right. Now, I want you to note, just make note of it. At the bottom of page 6. Or actually, bottom page 5. We're backtracking a little bit, but we'll go to the last page very quickly. You'll notice on me, I go into my spiel. I use Luke 18, 1 Corinthians 7, Matthew 5. Those are the three verses that I... Now, this is my question. Three questions. Luke 18, verses 28 through 30. Everybody see where I am? My question is, does Luke 18, 28 to 30 allow a man to divorce or put away his wife for the sake of the kingdom? My answer is no. That's me. I'm not wanting him to answer, too. Okay, but I'm putting it to him first. Okay, second question, does 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 10 and 11 allow a woman to divorce or put away her husband for the sake of the kingdom? My answer is no. In Matthew, the 5th chapter, verse 32, does that preclude divorce or putting away for any reason except for sexual immorality? All of these, by the way, are without reference to remarriage. So we're not talking about remarriage. We're simply talking about put away. So does Matthew 5:32 preclude divorce putting away for any reason except sexual immorality? My answer to that would be yes. Okay? So I'm on record with all three of those as far as that's what I'm believing. The next section, which you don't have to read, but I explain my argumentation. Okay? All right, now, at the bottom of page 6, where it gets to Bobby. Bobby felt like I was trying to trap him. He said, let's back up a little bit. You're wanting to. That's like saying, did you quit beating your wife? Is it you were beating her or you are not? In other words, you know, you're trying to trap me. Okay, I'm not trying to trap you. I don't want to trap you. Go ahead, whatever you want to say. And he's saying that I'm stating these things without qualifications. He wants to qualify, in effect, what for the sake of the kingdom means. He doesn't want to get into it. So I let him talk with regard to that. And you can read through that, but that's when we got to 7, where he said, basically, as soon as she leaves the room, the marriage is ended. Okay, all right. So after that, you'll notice in the middle of page 7, I say at this point the conversation turned to personal matters. He said, "Stan, I don't care. You know, I still have affection for you." And I told him, "Well, I have affection for you too." But, and then we went in, and he protested all of that. Okay, so later on we get back to it, and this is the end of it that I really want you to look at. He wants to. I want to get him to answer those questions. So I say, "Okay, I do. So I do want to understand because you felt like." I mean, it's important for us to clarify this, come to consensus. I say Luke 18. The question is, does it allow a man to divorce or put away his wife for the sake of the kingdom? I say no. Bobby said, I say it has to be qualified. I did qualify it for the sake of the kingdom. That's it. Bobby says, okay. So I'll stipulate as to what your definition of what for the sake of the kingdom is and what's excluded from that and what's included. I'm just wanting to get him to admit that second clause. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Bobby said, go ahead. All right. Now, top of page 8. I mean, you'd have to do that. I understand it because you made it clear. We're not talking about flippant things. I understand that. Whatever it is, for the sake of the kingdom, let's qualify. Does Luke 18:28 allow a man to divorce or put his wife for the sake of the kingdom? I say no, and you say yes. Bobby says yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay? So he admits. That's what he's saying. Again, they wouldn't say that. In January of 2009, they indicated there had been a change.
Mm-hmm. But they said it earlier.
They
said it over and over.
I understand that. But again, that's what Jerry said. Jerry said, you know, when we talked in Waco, you were defending this. And Bobby said, well, yes. I mean, Tom did. Said, well, yes. And he said, well, Jerry said, well, I came to this study. We're going to go to Luke 18. I was ready to deal with it, but we don't have to because, and Bobby said, well, when we were in Waco, or Tom said, when I was in Waco, I was, arguing, defending. He said, but not, I've since talked to Harry. We've had some studies, and I'm no longer holding to that. Okay, so again, with Tom, I don't know. Hmm. Bobby's still in.
Bobby hadn't caught up, though. No. He hadn't gotten the memo.
Well, I mean, he was right there, but I didn't get it.
No.
So, second question. Now again, he wasn't wanting to do this, so he said yeah, okay. So I add 1 Corinthians 7:10. Does that allow a woman to divorce or put away her husband for the sake of the kingdom, whatever that is? I say no. Bobby said, I'm going to get one in a minute. Bobby said in a barely audible. I mean, you have to crank it up as high as you can to hear it.
Uh-huh.
But the context indicates very clearly, as you see. Okay. He said yes again. Said, okay. Right. The final one, Matthew 5:32. I say yes and you say no. Bobby said, I don't know whether to say no or not on that one. And so I clarified. What I'm getting to is with this point. If Matthew 5:32 precludes any other reason than that, which is for fornication, then it would preclude for the sake of the kingdom as well. That's my contention. Bob said, okay. And so I say yes, it precludes for the sake of the kingdom. You say no, it doesn't? He shook his head no. He didn't say it out loud, but he shook his head no. And then at the end of it, he said, basically, our biggest hurdle is going to be understanding what constitutes 100% desire to go to heaven, and no matter what or who. And so basically what he's saying is that I, in my contention, am saying that a woman... has to put her husband before God.
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
That's the position they're taking in regard to it, which I don't believe follows.
That's all the better points.
So again, I was all ready when we came down here just to say, okay, I want you to see what they did, what they believed. But now, I know one thing. Tom denies believing that anymore. or did in January 2009, but he has not indicated to me that, well, you know, what he, those scenarios he brought up before, he's no longer accepting. Because the scenario he puts up with regard to that, it, you know, that's for the sake of the kingdom. That's the argument. The scenario is, in case of physical and moral abuse where a Christian woman sees her children exposed to violence by her husband that endangers their lives and immorality which endangers her soul, the Christian woman can scripturally sunder, depart from her husband for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He has never, that's a statement he was willing to sign whenever this came out, which is probably 2007, 2008.
But Stan, really, he's like nailing jello to the wall on that, because he doesn't, I believe he lacks confidence in his understanding of it. And he needs counseling from time to time to remind him what that is. And you are catching him without being able to get counsel. Is this what we believe or is this not what we believe? He actually knows the truth on this.
Well, I want y'all to know that again, some of the stuff, I like the statement of the elders, the letter that we wrote to Bobby, those kinds of things, I can't in good conscience just give y'all and have it going out. Not saying that y'all would spread it, but as far as the full transcript of the discussion I had with Bobby, not the full transcript, you've got basically all I've transcribed, except for a little bit that I didn't think really made any difference, but if you want to hear the full thing, then you can have the audio, because Bobby agreed to the audio for that purpose.
Thank you for reliving that.
And
sorry. But I appreciate it.
Is there such a scripture for a donut for your stomach sake? Because I think I've got to eat one. I need to drink water with
me. Well, Brother Mark believes that.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what I want to know on this, and I haven't heard them address so, is I'm wondering if there's another shoe to this, and that they're saying, oh no, brother, it has to be for the kingdom's sake. There has to be a severe circumstance, and then you can put your beating, abusive, whatever, made away for that. What if once you put them away for that cause, the one you've put away now fornicates, remarry? Is that person then going to say, okay, now the next step is, okay, now I'm free to remarry because they have...
Waiting game,
yeah. Isn't that where Warren Hapworth really
is,
though?
No, it's not. That's not the waiting game. They will not define that as the waiting game.
I know they won't. They say straws and I'm out.
And it's the way things fall out because of an action that I took, and now I can put you away.
Yeah, but see, what a thing is what it is. If you can't redefine the thing just to be particular. I know how we got to this conclusion, but if it comes out to be the same thing, that's still what it is.
That's what it is.
And we really could never teach their position, because even if we were to subscribe to teaching error, because it's too convoluted.
Yeah.
And it's too convoluted to preach anywhere, teach anywhere. And it's error to begin with. But for them to hang on to it is a matter of loyalty. And we could, the worst nightmare would be a public debate over this.
I think so.
It would blow them out of the saddle. They will never go.
I agree with that.
They would try to sucker somebody in like they were trying to get Stan sucked in on that thing. Stan saw it. No, I'm not going to do that. That's not right.
That's wisdom.
Yeah, but
the oral debate that Tom had, he had that. I think I mean, it's obvious he had that motivation. He wanted to get up in the West Side pulpit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he did indeed.
Yes, that,
I mean, he really
did. Mistake that would have been.
See, VFW is proprietary to these old guys. This belongs to them. This is their resource. Yeah. Younger men have to be subservient to that. You need to are toeing the line.
How about turn 50?
Well, that doesn't matter. You're a whippersnapper.
Does anybody know if any of these other fellows? I know Ron does. Does anybody know if the other fellows would take that next leg then and say, but if once she puts him away, he fornicates?
They don't want to go that. That's what the others will take it, but
I
that's
think
not
so.
What
but
right
I don't
now.
Know.
Well, and about that. You know, this is the point, and this is, if Bobby and Tom come, that's where they're going to try to put their argument, is on, okay, we've got to just come to this understanding. Divorce has the Americanized version of it and all that kind of stuff, and we've got to go back to what the Bible says, and we need to make this definition, what is put away. Yeah, I have a problem with that in a sense. But they take the same position that Ron takes on the definition of the term.
Mm-hmm.
That civil decree, I'm saying they're not identical. The biblical putting away is not identical to a civil decree. But I think a civil decree is a constituent, not a civil. There is a cultural constituency. A constituent element of putting away is cultural. whatever the culture may be. I can't separate the two entirely. That's what they do though. Okay, so Ron, exactly. Ron used that to bring up his after the civil divorce, she can put him away, and she is not put away basically because she and God does not recognize the putting away. And when I was holding a meeting, this is well before this happened. It's back in the early 2000s, late 1990s. I don't remember exactly when it was. It's when Tom was down in Florida. I held a meeting for him there. He was there 2 years. About the middle of it, I came and held a meeting. And we discussed Ron's position. And he disagreed with it. He thought that view of the definition was wrong. 2007, early part, when I had my study with him, in a private study, which I didn't record, should have, but didn't record, didn't think to. I told him, I said, Tom, you disagreed with Ron. We had that discussion. And you're making the same arguments now to defend your concept of this for the sake of the kingdom that Ron was using to defend his after the civil divorce putting away. And he said, well, Stan, he said, I'll take the truth. I'll follow the truth wherever it takes me.
No.
So I don't know if that means that he accepts what Ron says.
Truth magazine.
No, was making the same argument, and he didn't make that acknowledgement. Which I took as an acknowledgement.
Now I have a letter from Mike Willis where he makes a statement in there that he and Ron have their differences. He wouldn't say what they were. He said Ron and I have a difference of opinion on Matthew 19:9, 1 Corinthians 7. But we put our differences under Romans 14.
That's why we have this teaching on Romans 14.
You can read the correspondence I had with Ron over the article. And that's the argument he was making. He's saying it's apples and oranges. He used that word apples and oranges. Apples being doctrinal differences, oranges being applications to a doctrine we agree on. Mm-hmm. So that's why he says you can do that. That's why he says you can do it, is because we're fundamentally in agreement over the idea of one man, one woman for a lifetime, with one exception.
Oh, well, thank goodness.
But when scenarios arise, then we make a different application as to what God intended from that.
But yeah,
so we don't have to do that. Now, Joe Price, in his lesson he brought on Romans 14, where he addressed this. He said it's the matter of our application rather than actual doctrine. As far as the differences, and in those things we can differ. But he put Ron's position, and I don't know if he would make the same with regard to this.
He won't.
But this is why. See, this when I was going with Bobby, we're going around, doing no good on the put away thing.
Yeah.
And then I said, okay, now there's a second part of this that I want to get to, and that's what you said in your sermon. You know, and I said, and in fact, we began dealing with the point that you're still saying that there is more than one cause. You know, one cause, and he even said it. So, no, there's just one cause, and the cause is, and he put the exception of fornication in this. This is one of his contradictions. The only cause is if it's keeping you from serving God. That's it. For the sake of the kingdom. That's all it is.
David Bonner's sex statement.
Yeah, and so that's the claim that he makes. That's the only cause. And he puts everything in there, which allows him to say only one cause.
Including the fornication. He puts that in.
He puts it in there. He did that, and now he wasn't consistent about it, because when I drew him out, I was able to get for the sake of the kingdom is recognized. But that's in effect what they're saying is you've got exception, and that's why they'll tell you Matthew 19, Matthew 5, you can't go there because that's, or, you know, all those places, you can't go there because that's dealing with divorce and remarriage.
These guys, when they're teaching this privately or in local congregations and gospel meetings, like, which I suspect they've done, they're getting blowback from the members who don't understand this obvious contradiction. Mm-hmm. And they're on shaky ground. They feel their base is falling out from under them.
Mm-hmm.
And they either stay with the more conservative base who understands this concept very clearly, or they join the other crowd that has decided to do anything they want to. They rebel from Tom's teaching on Romans 14. Mm-hmm. And this is a quagmire. I mean, it's a shaky deal, actually, for everybody that's in their, what they consider their base. Conservative people, really.
Well, let me interject something on the Truth magazine. Do you remember a few years ago, and I wish I'd remember the date of it, but Tommy edited the Truth on, and he allowed it. Mike Willis allowed it in there. I don't know if you remember that. And then, basically, Mike Willis comes back, like, after the fact, well, y'all agreed, you know, you're in the late 80s. He's making this public before all. We're practicing unity and diversity. And you accepted, we had this discussion in the late 80s, and you basically, we've had fellowship all these years. And so basically what you're saying is, doesn't make any difference.
Well, you know, I appreciate the fact Donnie Rader left, because then at the same time when he left, it was hush hush, nice. Connie Adams doesn't hold to this position, but even as they disagree, it's
where Ron Howard is. I mean,
you know, and again, if that's fine.
Because I wrote to him about that. I appreciate basically.
Right, and I understand not everybody's going to get to the same place that I'm at, but that's why, Mark, you indicated to them they're coming. And my answer was, I won't be here. I mean, if it's something where we're going to deal with it, then I'll come. But if it's, somebody's going to be teaching on something, and Tom and Bobby show up, and we're going to go out to eat afterwards, and Steve indicated that same problem is, I'll come, but I'm not going to eat with them after. And so have I publicly marked Tom and Bobby? No, I haven't. I mean, I've not reached that point. And the reason why I haven't, and this, I may be open to criticism here, I don't know. It's just a judgment I've made, is I have publicly identified their teaching as error. I have indicated a willingness to continue to study with them so that we might come to unity. That's where it was. I haven't actually dealt publicly with this issue for years, several years. Mm-hmm. I've alluded to it in sermons. I've written on it in bulletin and everything, but actually saying, okay, now, we have to deal with this issue because of these guys doing this. I haven't done that in a while. But it has been middle of 2005 to now February 2012 since this came out. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're established and firm in their contention. So yes, I do believe they're false teachers.
Well, let me interject something. That this is why I publicly marked them, because we have people. I knew that we're going to go to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, because they're members there, Josh and Amanda, over there, and so they didn't know about Tom and Bobby's teaching and everything. So I had a sermon on it, and mentioned their names and so on. They go up to McKinney where they thought Jack Howard was. Of course, they didn't know he passed away.
And there's Bobby in the pulpit.
And Bobby is right. He is preaching there. And he says, Josh and Amanda, they call because they're confused. He said, did you know Bobby Holmes got up in the pulpit? And he said, next Sunday, he said he's going to preach divorce for one reason, not for the kingdom of heaven's sake. And so he said, I thought you had warned us about, so I understand the confusion. And then, of course, when he preached the next Sunday, he taught the same error.
He taught the same error this summer
publicly. But then I was in the middle of it because another preacher had come to that congregation, and my name got in the middle of that.
But that's the problem, is because people are hearing Bobby say just one cause,
right?
Hearing Tom say just one cause, and they're saying, well, they're not teaching.
They don't go deep.
Why are you guys so critical of them? Why are you, because they're not off on this.
But Josh and Amanda heard it for themselves.
Yeah.
And of course, that was really
came to West Side. Yeah.
Really the closest congregation to McKinney.
Those are great.
Can you believe? Yeah, they're going from. Good. From where they live, which is in Irving.
But what if I'd have said nothing, and then they, get deceived by what they're...
Yeah, and that's what I have very clearly done, too, in the pulpit, expressed the error, named them as teaching that error. It was at the point in my mind, and y'all tell me if I'm wrong in this, but, that the identifying an individual as teaching error and being in the midst of study with them or willing to continue study doesn't... Do you, by saying that they're teaching error, are you marking them as a false teacher instantly?
I think you're really playing with semantics there.
That's very tough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Marking them really are. Romans 16:17, they're causing division.
If you
mark and avoid them,
does marking them have to say I'm marking them? I'm noting them.
Doesn't have
them.
To say
well,
that.
Yeah.
Scopo means take note of.
But does it? That's not what I asked. Do you have to use those words? Or, and I think you're playing with, I think you're running a fine line that in my mind, I'll tell you straight up, in my mind, you marked Bobby.
Okay.
And I think you did, Robert.
And I think I don't have a problem. I understand. And again, I do believe he's a false teacher.
But you marked Bobby in that sermon.
Right.
I don't think you have to use those words. We're marking him and noting him.
He identified his position as error.
Well, and I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that at all. I think you're in your mind you're playing with semantics there.
Okay.
And I don't have a problem with your stance. I don't have a problem with what you did.
I understand it. I'm just asking this question though. Yeah. Let's say I teach an erroneous doctrine from the pulpit, and the elders come to me and say, or stand up afterwards and say, Stan got this wrong. We're going to study with him and show him where, you know. But they don't want to let it pass because of who may leave. So they say, Stan got this wrong. And there are some severe ramifications for this, and we lead individuals to sin.
Right. Yeah.
We got to say this is wrong. And so I get together with them in a study, and I say, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, you're right. I go up and acknowledge it afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it ought to be.
Yeah.
I understand,
yeah.
But did they mark me as a false teacher?
No.
No.
Because you were at the point in your studies with Bobby that you had done all this studying back and forth.
Right.
Yeah.
Your sermon was the culmination of all of your study.
Right.
The elders come to you after you preach on a Sunday morning. The elders come to you and say, we're going to study with Stan because we don't think he's correct about this. Mm-hmm. They're studying to be done. And then you go back and if your heart is right, you go back and say, I was wrong about this.
I think I felt in my mind with regard to this is to be slow to do that as a marking because I still felt like, even after these times that even today, in some ways, I think Bobby still just doesn't get it. Tom, I think gets it, but Bobby, I just want.
I wouldn't worry one way or the other. Personally, I wouldn't worry one way or the other because first of all, what's been done is done, people who really want to know and understand and hear the truth will be able to know and understand what you did, why you did, when you did. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a rash decision. It was the culmination of a body of study. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't.
The difference between a person who's going to be marked or not is, or like in Stan's situation, where we need to study this. I was wrong. Is a contrite heart. That's the difference. The man who will not repent, yeah. He is to be marked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The individual who all of us are.
That's it right there.
Our pledge to ourselves should be. I'm with Jesus. I'm with the Lord. And if I teach error, show me. I'll repent and I'll teach the truth. That should be. Mm-hmm. I don't care the rest of
Apollos.
Our lives.
Look at Apollos.
Yeah.
I
mean,
I was going to say. Do you know what Bobby and Tom believe about Apollos? They believe Apollos is a false teacher. Apollos was not a false teacher.
No.
Scripture says being unaware doesn't make you a false preacher.
The scripture says he taught the things of the Lord accurately.
Right. But being unaware, not a false teacher. But you know why they take that position, Stan? Because that's what debaters take.
Okay.
That position. That's why they do that.
That's right. Yeah. They're stuck on debate.
They're stuck on debate. They cannot see beyond it.
Destroying the brethren and destroying the faith.
It's like the precedent the court set when they finally make a decision. This is the precedent. I mean, I know you may have had this happen to you. Claim so much mileage, blah 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 blah. Then they sued somebody, and IRS won, and they came back and audited everybody that they told them was okay. Well, we have a precedent here. Now that's exactly what they're doing with what they're saying, Stan. They're doing the same stinking thing. If I can get enough people in the court of opinion to agree with me, I can get you.
and I can put you down. You know, no matter what I thought, life or whatever, I can win because I have enough people standing with me. Well, you know what? You with the Lord standing with you, you're nothing. I don't care who you are.
Okay.
Well, you know, I've made that statement on a number of occasions that it was not my intent to mark him as a false teacher when I did that sermon. Now, I've made that to several individuals and made it publicly. I will acknowledge the fact that I did what I did. I'm not backing down on what I did, and I'm not apologizing for what I did because I would do exactly the same thing again. And that's what I've told, you know, I told Bobby and Tom. I said, you know, in my mind, it wasn't a marking, identifying you as a heretic or a false teacher. And I certainly didn't use the terms. I said, but I did what I felt was necessary, and I did it in accord with the instructions and will of the elders, and that was the main thing. Is they were trying to say that what I did and what the elders intended for you to do were different, and that's not the case at all. Because not only did they ask me to do it, but I gave them this handout, which is around here somewhere. But anyway, it's the actual slides of the divorce of the sermon that I preached before I preached it, and said, "I want you to make sure this is all right before I get up the pulpit and do it." They read it after the thing was said. There was not a single criticism leveled by anyone in the congregation, and the elders all told me I did a good job. So, you know, so there wasn't anything in that.
I think that you had the support of the elders, and Tom is, and because of one of the elders' clumsy way of handling things, misunderstood.
I think Jerry just, what he does is he tries to please everybody sometimes. He wanted Bobby to know and to soften the blow a little bit that, hey, we can't afford you anyway.
Yeah,
and he did indicate
that
Bobby
would have cut this for him.
Yeah,
and when
because of the fact that at that point in time we'd had a couple of reversals, and didn't last long. We actually very quickly got back in good shape, but we not only stopped supporting Bobby, but we also stopped supporting Greg at the same time. But we made very clear to Bobby the reason why we were stopping his support, and that it was different. When we told Greg, we told him we have to stop it just because we've had this reversal and we can't support you anymore. With Bobby, it was, as I read, you know, it's because of what he taught.
I was in a meeting in Oak Mountain.
I don't know what it was funny about that either.
Birmingham 8 years ago, and I had a bunch of quotes on divorce or marriage. Robert Hartwright was in the audience. He was jumping me as to why I was quoting Ed Harrell and not Ron Halbrook.
Of course.
And I said, well, I can only quote so many.
Good answer.
But he asked me, and this is like your deal with marking. He said, "Why would you call Ron Halbrook a false teacher?" 8 years ago, I wouldn't. I would have said, "Okay, that's wrong. I don't agree with you." Mm-hmm. I was personal friends with Ron, and so he said, "You didn't call Ron a false teacher?" I said, "Not at this point." He said, "Well, let me ask you: would you invite him for a meeting where you are?" I said, "Used to, not anymore." He said, "Would you fellowship the ones that practiced what he says you can do on that?" And I said, "Definitely not." He said, "Then you're saying he's a false teacher." I said, "Okay." I said,
Unintended consequences.
He was expecting me to then say, "Okay, then Ed Harrell's not," but I said, "Okay, they both are."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Mark Roberts did the same thing to me when they had Ed Harrell to me, because I took objection with it. He said, "Well, you talk to the elders." I said, "Well, I don't know the elder, but I know you, and I know you take a different position on Romans 14, so why are you having it?" And he said, "Why'd y'all have wrong?" Well, my answer was, I didn't even know Ron taught what he taught when we had him for meeting it several years ago.
I didn't even know, but
I said, but let's just accept the fact that I'm inconsistent. Doesn't make you right. Why are you having him?
In 1980.
He didn't say anything much more.
Call
me some names.
In 1982, I had a discussion with the Southwest Church of Christ and the School of Preaching with Norman Starling and Jerry Moffitt, who is their debater. Was, I don't know what he is now. But anyway, I was studying fellowship with the preacher boys. I call them preacher boys. And they didn't like it, so they pull me into the home. Oh, we're on. No, this is going to do it. Okay, I said, all right, so listen. And this is what they said, and I think you'll find this very interesting. They said to me, this is 1982, okay, 82. They say, you know, Dennis, you stand up so straight you bend backwards. That's the way you are. And so I said, well, thank you. Appreciate that. They said, but we just have one question for you. I said, okay, shoot. Do you know Homer Haley? He said, yes, personally. I've known him since I was 17 years old. Well, we want to know something. You know what he teaches, don't you? And I said, yes. You mean on what? I know what he teaches. You mean on marriage versus remarriage? I said, yes, I do. I know exactly what he teaches, and I've told him he's wrong to his face. And told him if you tell him publicly, I was going to mark him publicly. Told him that too when I was 17 years old. I wasn't even a preacher then anyway. But the thing about it is that that's important about this is that they said, well, if he starts teaching this publicly, will you mark him as a false teacher? I said, absolutely. He said, well then, but what about Harry Pickett Jr.? What about, he went through the list of the preachers of the day. He said, they're all in fellowship with him and they know what he's teaching and they're in fellowship with him. And he went, what about that? I said, would you be in fellowship with him? I said, nope, don't think so. Couldn't be. Because I'm not going to walk with Aaron, I don't care what your name is. And they said, well, that's consistent. Here we are today. What do I? What if we get beat up? Don't you? You may even mention Brother Haley's name. Oh, poor Brother Haley! You're beating up on Brother Haley. His book is still out there, destroying souls from every direction. You know, come on, guys.
Several other books too now.
Oh, absolutely.
I said several other books too. Oh,
several other books. Yeah, besides Hell Doesn't Exist, all that nonsense. No, what do you think? Yeah. I mean, there it is. But you know what they were teaching? Oh, this is the punchline. Do you know what they were teaching in the school of preaching at there at Southwest School of Preaching in Austin for their fellowship? The Arlington meetings. That was their textbook. Interesting. Wow. Very interesting. That was their concept of fellowship. And I guess I see this. So anytime you went to meet with them or study with them, that meant that you were with us.
In fellowship.
Well, you sat down and ate a meal with us. I saw them sit down and eat meals together. I said, I can't eat with those people.
That's your test of fellowship.
There you go.
What, food? Yeah, they're still stuck in 1959, 1960. That's the group I came out of.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they have a lot right.
Yeah,
well, let's get right down to it. They have a great deal right. A lot that some of my own brethren do, that's for sure.
Chip, you have a thought I'm afraid that I have to hear.
No, well. No.
I like your brother.
we're telling stories, but we're not doing anything.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Uh-huh. What now?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I don't mind the stories. I'm not dismissing any of the stories or anything.
We're on the
clock.
What is divorce?
We're on the clock. We are.
What is divorce? That's the question. What is divorce?
Well, then we've got to decide that. And we cannot decide that question according to a Western standard.
No. Okay.
We have to decide it according to God's standard.
That's right.
I'm afraid to hold this up because it's Western.
Well, anybody who uses a laptop for a compute for a Bible is you know, if you don't have the pages in front of you.
Well, I'll start in a very concise and simple way by making an argument that I made to Bobby, and that is that I believe that we do a disservice if we take a definition of a term and we do violence to the context. Definitions are extremely important. I think that often, however, especially when you get into the definition of Greek words and all, a lot of times you're dealing with etymology rather than actual definitions and usage. And that can be dangerous. I've seen that. And the other thing is that when you have a term that is used, and it certainly is the correct term, like apaluo or the others that are used, aphemia and all, to where the term is used in multiple contexts, and the term generally means to depart or leave, repudiate, whatever the case may be. And to say, as they have been saying, this because that's what the word definition of the word is, that's all that it means, then we've got a problem. And the argument that I made with Bobby, and he said, well, that's Old Testament type stuff, but it was a precedent that I was seeking to establish is in Deuteronomy chapter 24, that there was a certificate of divorce. Now, he really has a problem with this. And what you'll find is an argumentation that Tom makes as well. They begin
they begin trying to say that what you're doing is you're elevating the law of men above the law of God. They use the Philippines as an example where divorce is not legal. They go through all this process. And they say in using Deuteronomy 24 that there was nothing civil about that. That in other words, the letter was not
verse one.
Yeah,
the divorcement was not civil.
That's right. And I'll tell you why. Because this was just between the man and the woman. In other words, he gave her a certificate of divorce. Mm-hmm. It was not something that was lodged in the city in the county courthouse.
I know about that.
And so my statement was is that it's while you know, when we're talking about, I mean, that's what they're talking about, the state and the laws of the state. And this is my question is, it was nevertheless required by Moses. And so you say that, in effect, the putting away of divorce happens before any civil decree. And not only that, but that a civil decree is not necessary. That's why they have the may or may not seek this civil redress in the states and all. Tom takes the position, he took it in the January 9th meeting, that a divorce... in the Philippines, a woman has the right to divorce her husband and remarry, despite the fact that the Philippines say divorce is unlawful.
There is no divorce in the Philippines.
Right. She can put a flagrant adulterer. This is what Tom says. She can put away, and that's why they don't want to use the word divorce anyway, because then that brings in the idea of a civil aspect. You can put away a flagrant adulterer and remarry. The Philippine woman has that right, because that's the position he's taking. Okay, well, my view of this is, okay, you know, when we were in Romans 14 discussing the subject of fellowship, remember how everybody said matters of opinion? While we understood what that meant, it was actually an inaccurate term, because it wasn't a matter of opinion. Paul had weighed in on the matter and said, this is the truth on it. So what the correct term is, matter of indifference or an authorized liberty. You could use those terms. Matter of opinion is an inaccurate way of putting it. Okay, here we're using the term civil. And while I understand what everybody means by that, I think it perhaps may more accurately be described as a cultural thing, a cultural aspect to the divorce. And I don't think you can separate the two. Because, and I used Deuteronomy 24, my question is, with regard to Moses and the law he gave to the Israelites, if the man did not, as a part of that culture, a matter of their law, did not give that woman the certificate of divorce, would God recognize that as a divorce? If he just said, I put you away, but he did not supply that cultural aspect, what is required, would she be divorced? Never got an answer from Bobby about that.
That's a good question.
And the same question I asked with regard to the Muslims. Okay, the Muslims, what do you have to do? I divorce you 3 times, from what I understand, if that's accurate. Okay, if a man says, or a man thinks, I'm putting her away, I'm repudiating her, and again, this can be, according to their understanding, a mental thing. In fact, that's something that comes out of the January 9th thing, the study with the elders there as well, is that position is that it's a... Because the question is asked, do you have to go before the law of the land and get that civil decree? And their view is, no, you don't. Don't have to. You may, but you don't have to. But let's say he only says, I divorce you once, or I divorce you twice, but not 3 times. Has God granted that divorce in God's eyes? Is it? And I don't believe it is. I think that is a part of the repudiation of the marriage. There, just as it is with the marriage, you know, not everybody, in order to be considered married, have to have a marriage certificate and throw it into the deal. And I'm not saying that the certificate has to be there in the first place, but I am saying that you're not married unless you fulfill whatever those cultural requirements are. And in our nation, the cultural aspect is civil. Mm-hmm. Not all nations, but all. But there is always that cultural aspect to it, and it's not a put away unless the cultural aspect is there. And so he said, well, you know, we're under Jesus' law, and that was the old covenant. Well, but that's not my point, and that's not, and that doesn't invalidate principle, the fact that in each culture there is a different requirement as to what brings about the putting away, and that those things need to be... So I say, okay, is the civil decree the divorce? No, but it is a constituent element of it.
Just the ratification.
Because of Rome. It's just a part of it. And that's what Jerry Feit said. They were trying to make these things. He said, I can't separate the two.
Right.
Yeah, I can't pull them completely apart. And I go back to Deuteronomy 24. I think it's a valid argument, is that if a man said, I'm putting you away, but he was unwilling to give her that certificate, then God did not recognize that divorce because he did not do what Moses required.
But he still hated what the man did.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Oh, it's unlawful. It's
well,
yeah.
That's the word that's used in Malachi 2:16.
And that's an interesting thing.
He doesn't say, I hate the bill of divorcement. He says, I hate you sending her out.
Yeah.
But again, under the old law, it was permitted. It was allowed.
I had these guys argue that he hated it, but that doesn't mean it's sin.
They did that same argument.
That's what I said.
God hates it.
God hates it. Well, it's not sinful.
But it was under the old law, under the civil ceremonial.
Right.
That it was allowed. It was permitted. In those circumstances, and it was a procedure to go through.
Yeah, but the hate in Malachi, it's sin. And so the question is not so much, because you know you say as a woman sinned when the man's guilty of adultery and she puts him away. No, she's not sinned. God still hates that. Well, sure, I understand that God hates the divorce, but
He has permitted. He's allowed her some recourse.
Yeah, but I was using Malachi.
Yeah.
And they were. And I've got two individuals that I could name and won't, but I could two individuals that I specifically could name that said, in effect, that in that text of Malachi, that though it does indicate that God hated it, that doesn't mean that it was sin. That was one of the first times that my mind was blown through all of this. Not the last, but one of the first times that it was.
It is a violent thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
Violence.
You're trying to clothe yourself with violence. You sin against the wife of your youth.
Stan, to reiterate your deal, though, about whether or not she was put away, you know, if he didn't give the decree, the Talmud dealt with that. Here's a woman, and of course the woman was not permitted to initiate the divorce procedures. If she wanted the divorce and the man was unwilling to, she was to go to the elders. The elders would put a fine on the man and would keep increasing the fine until he was finally forced to come up with that bill of divorce.
That's interesting.
Well, and let's just go back to the very beginning, you know, not just divorce, the bill of divorce, but say here in America, if you did not get a marriage license, if you did not do any of the, like you said, the cultural aspects of the whole marriage thing, would you be married in God's eyes if you just said, I marry you?
Tim Hill says yes.
I mean, if
well, but see, that's something that Tom and Bobby both fought against up in the Northwest, though. Daryl Bean, they sent me tapes and said, "You got to listen to this. This guy's teaching error," and that's the position he took. Mm-hmm. Is that there's nothing required other than the determination.
Well,
I'm going to take
you. Well, you got 2 5-year-olds playing the house, and they get married. Well, they're married for life.
Daryl Bean taught that Jesus, established the New Testament age. Yeah. That's what he argued. No, he didn't do that. He used it as an example, though, to show them that God never meant for it to be that way, but from the beginning it hath not been so. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man, and that includes the two people who are married, charizo their marriage. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the word charizo is an interesting word. That seems to be the word that comes under more, you know, more interesting discussion, because charizo, which, as our brother there, Brother Lewis has said, is to put, and so has theirs and others, to put a space between, put a space. Now, that's interesting too. What do you think is meant by putting a space? I'm just putting thought out there.
But again, you know, the point that I, and again, it's not in any way to demean the importance of the word studies and all. But that's kind of why I made that point is that you know, I recognize that there are general concepts of departure and putting space and all involved in it. And the words actually are used that way in other places. That's why, you know, in Luke 18, depart, that word is used with regard to, or to leave, excuse me, the word is used with regard to the wife, as well as the, you know, you don't divorce your mom and dad, you don't divorce your children. But you know, they're saying, okay, it can be put in there as far as divorce for the kingdom of heaven's sake. And no, that term, you know, the concept of divorce isn't even in Luke 18.
Correct.
It's not even a consideration. It's not in the context.
Yes.
But so to arbitrarily say, because the word is there and it means to leave, that includes the concept of divorce in that. No, I think it's just is,
no, it has to apply to all of them.
Yeah, it's the other way around. But yeah, you've got to talk about context in there, and in the context, as you look at what Scripture indicates, then yes, there is something beyond merely, you know, merely saying I don't want to be married to you anymore.
Can I tell you what
it's done?
Can I tell you what I think? What I thought. It's just my thoughts, but it's interesting to me that the Lord, when he spoke in Matthew 19 and 9, he did not use the word charizo, but rather apoluo, because he was showing that apoluo would indicate, well, I guess would indicate, I think it would indicate that the instant, we call it instant party, was not charizo in the marriage. It had been charizo
of the person.
And I think that's what I've thought over the years. I've thought about this a lot. I may not be right, but I've thought for many years, I thought, well, you know, the Lord would have to use this word to show that the innocent party, mm-hmm. quote, innocent party, was not the destroyer of the marriage.
Correct.
You've got a lot of people who don't seem to understand this principle, mm-hmm. and I'm a little concerned about that. Mm-hmm. They don't understand this principle. For instance, one brother in Christ, he told me the story, and I have no reason to doubt him. He told me the story, a real life story, that he and his wife were Christians, his first wife, okay? They were Christians, and one day his wife just up and filed divorce in a court of law and put him away. And he said, okay, I don't know why you've done this. I don't understand what's happened here. But, you know, and so he was ready to live the rest of his life, a celibate life, because he was put away for a reason other than fornication. And that's what he believed. I guess he still believes it. I don't know if he believes now, but that's what he believed. Okay, he told me that 1 year after that divorce was final, she asked, his ex-wife asked to meet him for lunch. And so he said, well, sure. So they sat down to eat. And she said, I'm not here for your sake. I'm here because my friends keep bugging me about this, and I want to get it straight. That's what she said. And he said, well, what? He said, well, you know, when I filed divorce, he said, the reason I filed divorce because I wasn't with one man, I was with five men. And I didn't love you and didn't want you because I was with them sexually. Well, now,
why don't you tell
Let's
me
go back. Well, no, because she wanted to destroy him.
Right.
She hated him. And right. She was a Christian, a quote-unquote Christian, and she knew what would destroy him. Now, what are you going to say? See? What are you going to mm-hmm. say? What was the cause?
Right.
Well, he thought it was for some other reason.
Right.
He did not know that it was the exact reason. But let's go a step further. What if she's lying to him? Yeah. Do you see what right. I mean? And, right. and also, right. you know something else, Dan? Yeah. We're assuming, I think a lot of times preachers are assuming that what they're being told is the truth. I don't believe a word they say. I've had to heard so many different stories. You know, they can say, well, he did this shit. I said, stop. I said, stop. I don't hear that nonsense. Mm-hmm. That's nonsense. If you tell me you can't get along, okay, but that I can deal. If they commit to, are you going to forgive them or are you going to put them away? I mean, what is it going to be? I said, you're coming here. And I said, are you here just to get out of the marriage, to destroy it, or are you here to preserve it? I said, I'm charged by the living God, through the Son of God, to try to preserve marriage that's according to His will.
Right.
That's all I know to say. Because right. I know that these scenarios come up, and I know they do, but you know what? Have mercy. Who knows who's telling the truth?
Exactly.
Right? I mean,
my wife comes to me and says, I'm running around on you, and I put her away, and she's lying to me because she wants me to go to hell when I die. I can only go on...
I can only go what, she say, what they say. What she
Thank says. You.
Exactly.
The Lord says,
I think that plays a part in what we're discussing.
And that's why you have to be careful about
I'm just telling that's fair because I just that's you know so that's all I say.
You are right in saying we need to have this definition of divorce down, mm-hmm. and I understand that's where it goes in a sense. But again, you know, if we end up dealing with Tom and Bobby in regard to this, that's where they're going to put it.
No, I know. That's where they'll go.
As far as this is what I mean, and I'll just give you that one scenario that it's actually in there, I think, but I didn't talk about it. We had a woman at Westside whose husband was physically abusive to her, and she said, "What do I do? What do I do? I know I can't divorce him. What do I do?" So we'll get out of the house. Mm-hmm. And
who has not told a woman to do that?
Yeah. get out of the house. Get
some, I said, who has not? You two rich men.
Well,
no,
we have.
How many of you
actually taken the woman and her children into the living room?
Yeah.
We have done that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And in that situation, though, she did for a while, left the home for a while. He was actually taking medication that was making him violent. It was for his, he had a lot of the problems. But anyway, he taking medication. He got off the medication. They came to some agreement. She went back in the home. Bobby said that, in effect, what y'all did is what we're advocating. And what we say is that when she left the home, they were no longer sharing bedboard and
life.
Is it bedboard and life? Yeah, and life together.
I've never seen that in the Bible.
Okay. The marriage was over.
There was a space.
And then in the reconciliation, the marriage begins again. But there was she had repudiated him by leaving the home.
No,
the
marriage was.
But I'm saying that's what they're saying. But this gives them a little leeway, because they're saying, although we're differing in our semantics,
we're saying the
things,
same thing. So
what we're practicing is the same thing. And my assertion is no, because if I believe what you say with regard to put away, I would have told her stay in the home, because that's what the Bible teaches. You know, that you can't divorce except for fornication.
So you got to sit there and take.
So ultimately, it comes down to this. It comes down to the fact, and this is where I wasn't able, when we had our study with Harry and Tom and Bobby, and I'm not saying Harry agrees with them, although he was trying to kind of defend them at that particular time, but I don't know where it is now. I don't think it's the same place. But when Harry and Tom and Bobby were with the elders and I, the entire time was spent on, okay, what does it mean? And I talked with Ron, and Ron and I figured out we were in agreement on what put away is, and blah, 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 and y'all should continue to study it. And at the very end of that time together, they said, has this been helpful? Does this get us any closer? And I said, well, maybe, but sometime in the future, we got to deal with what Bobby taught.
That's right.
Sometimes we got to be able to learn Bobby taught. And the point is, regardless of what the definitions of put away and all are, you are saying that there is another cause other than fornication without remarriage. So regardless of what the definition put away is and everything, I'm saying there's only one cause. You're saying there are two, at least. And again, they're able to put a whole bunch of reasons or scenarios under for the sake of the kingdom, which I think is
the second one. You can add several.
I mean, and this is in word. What do you add? And what do you preclude from it? And different individuals are going to take different views
over the issue in each one of them, rather than.
So I think it's multiple causes. I think because you have for the cause of fornication. Okay, I think that's no more a cause. I think that because he put us into debt is no less a cause than for the sake of fornication. Or because he brought pornography into the house, that's a cause. Though they say, no, those aren't causes, The cause is for the sake of the kingdom. And these are just scenarios that come under that one cause. And that's why they say only that.
I want to make a point on this too, as far as the idea of a non-Christian, you know, can do basically what a Christian divorce for the kingdom of heaven's sake. I mean, you say, well, non-Christian, they shift that to a moral obligation. They have a moral obligation
I asked that of Tom, and I didn't get an answer at all, because I said, you got that situation.
They have a moral obligation.
Yeah, you got Luke 18. What that does is, though, if it's for the sake of the kingdom, that's only the sake of God.
So
by definition, a non-Christian cannot divorce for the sake of the kingdom.
Correct.
So you have a scenario that where a Christian can divorce where a non-Christian can't, or else.
Yes. Right.
Or else you've got says the standard for a non-Christian is higher than a Christian.
Detail we've all dealt with individual situations where somebody comes, can I get a divorce or can I get married, or the Lord wouldn't want me to live alone versus my life, would he? All those questions we get asked. The bottom line here is, it seems to me, is that we need, in order to teach this where people can understand it, it's one thing for us to say, here, having a couple hours to talk about it and all these experiences, but another, to get up and actually teach in a way that people can remember what you said about it.
Yeah,
and I think the thing hangs on Luke 18:29. that they're
well, Luke 18, 1 Corinthians 7.
That's right.
I mean, yeah, Luke, exactly. Luke, I think,
so,
and it does hang on those two.
But because this is where they're getting their second cause. This is their reason for their multiple causes.
Multiple
and
causes.
You have a second, you have several. But so I'm saying that second. So the understanding, we need to simply be able to teach this so that the brethren around us, I just use the term brethren in the pews, but you know, we have to wake them up.
Pew brethren.
They, I don't care, you know. They care, but most of this is a preacher fest to them.
In their mind,
it is.
You,
no,
you
really,
don't, yeah, you don't right, define yeah. it very clearly.
That's what they think.
And teach on it and take a stand on it. They will win this battle on the semantic side.
Okay. Luke 18 is for me. Luke 18 is easier to deal with than 1 Corinthians 7.
Okay. Oh,
Luke 18 for me is very, very simple, and I keep it on a very, very simple level.
Right.
If you can divorce your wife, according to Luke 18, yeah. you have to be able to do the exact same thing, same word is used, to your house.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And you can't
yeah. unless you're really strong.
So therefore, Luke 18 is. It's not talking about divorce as we see it in the United States.
And you can
throw that idea all the way out the window because you cannot do the same thing that you say to your wife that you can do to your house.
Well,
period. That discussion is over with.
Uh-huh.
1 Corinthians 7 is the bigger one.
Or your parents, or what could possibly be marshaled for abandoning your children?
Well, today you have. Kids divorcing their parents. You have that.
I can't answer that, Lewis, as far as what Bobby said. Bobby says he's not talking about little kids. He's talking about grown children.
And
he has separated himself from his grown children.
We can make scenarios for parents and children, but you cannot make a scenario for your house.
For your house, yeah. That's a good point.
Whether it's your home or whether it's the home, the superstructure itself or the environment, you can't do the same thing that you're saying to your wife you can to your house or your home. And so, while the parents and the brothers and sisters are relevant to the whole thing, their argument is false flat on its face because you can't do one to the other and the same word is used in the same context.
That's right.
And so 1 Corinthians 7, for me, is the bigger one.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bigger one.
But and you have to connect the two in your teaching, though.
So well,
you,
oh, yeah.
So you avoid the hanging up on Luke
18. Well, and that's why Luke 18 is just...
Just okay, show it logically.
This is it. Okay, now we're going to deal with the bigger issue, 1 Corinthians 7. And how do we deal with that?
Yeah.
What's the proper teaching, proper method on that?
Before we leave Luke 18, let's finish driving the nails in that confidence.
Oh, sure. I'll drive any nails.
Peter said we've left our homes. Did Peter leave his home?
No.
It's very easy to show that he was still with his wife while Jesus and he were walking earth.
Right.
And it's easy to show that he was with his wife when he became an elder and that he carried his wife along with enough church support according to 1 Corinthians 9.
Yes.
Yep. Right.
Right. So, no, he did not leave his home. That's obviously not what he meant.
Right. Okay, well, Bobby Holmes says that that's just ridiculous, that argument.
Well, Bobby has said that several times. When he can't answer it, it's a ridiculous argument that I'm not even going to...
Right.
That's when they begin to say that it... But what is under consideration there is that they will do whatever is necessary. If it were would have been necessary for him to divorce his wife, he would.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah,
and so the argument, you know, would be something similar to when Jesus told the rich young ruler to sell all that you have,
mm-hmm.
because for him it was required. You know, not for everyone to give up everything, but for him it was necessary. And that's what they're advocating.
Don't ever want us to leave our homes and wives and families when we go off on gospel meetings for the kingdom's
sake. Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. One day you go to your house and say, wife, I'm going to be a gospel preacher.
I left my wife for three weeks. So.
And you go ahead and you do it, and she says, oh, I'll go along with you. And that's or not.
Or not.
As far as or not. I was willing to leave her over it, but she stayed with me.
And again, I don't know if it's a semantics thing or just a logical thing. Verse 29 says leave a wife or children, mm-hmm. and they say automatically, well, that's adult children.
Yeah,
where does it say that?
Where does it say you have to leave with the intent to separate
forever?
Where does it say that? It's not in that passage.
It's not in that passage.
You had to.
No,
you had to add the intent.
Let's talk about priorities. Everybody until the 10 out understood that. Yeah, that's interesting.
And so, so
no one takes that.
You know, Luke 18 just falls flat because, and then you, then you go over to what is it? Matthew 10.
Mark 10.
Mark 10.
Mark 10. Yeah.
Where you know there's the difference. Well, no, I was Matthew 10 verse 37. He who loves father more than me is not worthy of me. Yes, he who loves son or daughter is and then what is it?
Mark much
10 is hate.
The equivalent to Luke 18.
Yeah. And you know this is the idea, the concept that we're talking about here.
Yes. And that's all we're talking about.
And that's all that Jesus.
That's all Jesus.
That's all Jesus is talking about.
That's all.
And so when we shift over to 1 Corinthians 7, what is Paul saying when he says, but if she does, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled?
Well, and what comes to my mind in that regard is that it is a very difficult passage. We all acknowledge the fact that brethren have struggled with this over the years. So what do you do whenever there is a difficult passage? Whenever you're dealing with Revelation 20 with a premillennialist, you go to Mark 9:1.
Right.
Okay. When you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, there are two scenarios that come, two possibilities that come to mind. When it says, "Don't depart, but if you do," there's one or two possibilities in that. One is that, as Jerry put it, is that you're dealing with a sin and consequence. And the way I put it in there is that if you depart, then either remain unmarried or be reconciled. That's talking about a mitigating factor in this regard. Jerry used the illustration that I thought was good in that study of him walking across a wet floor with dirty shoes and his wife saying, "Stop right there." By saying "stop right there," she is not indicating that his walking across in the first place was okay. Mm-hmm. She's just saying, "Don't make it worse." And I think there's some truth to that. I've used the same illustration with regard to defending. My son telling his girls basketball team is they're going to be guarding you real strongly, and don't turn the ball over. But if you do, get back on defense.
Yeah.
You know, by saying, "But if you do get back on defense," doesn't mean it's all right to turn the ball over.
Yeah.
He just said, "Don't do it."
Okay.
Now, in using that illustration that Jerry used, and by making that point, Tom acknowledged that that's one way that you could view it, but that there is another way. Okay, and that's his way, which means that by saying, "But if you do," there is a scenario to where she could depart without sin. So there are two ways of looking at it. Okay, there may be two ways you could look at it if it weren't for plain scripture that teaches otherwise. Okay,
yeah.
And this is why those three questions: Luke 18, yes or no; 1 Corinthians 7:10, yes or no; and then Matthew 5. Now, in Matthew 5:32. I think that's the plain scripture that throws theirs out under the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is this. They say you can't go to Matthew 19 because that's talking about divorce and remarriage. So, Jesus says just one cause there. Well, that's not valid. I'm not sure. I haven't heard them holding to that much recently, but they were really strong on that. You can't go to Matthew 19. Matthew 19 doesn't apply. Well, Matthew 5:32, there is no remarriage under consideration.
That's right.
And what we're talking about there is when the man divorces his wife, the man who's doing the divorcing, he's not remarrying in Matthew 5:32.
No, he's not.
There's nothing about that. So I say to you, whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery. And there's no remarriage in that text.
No.
No, it's definitely a term alone.
No, I think that Matthew 5:32.
Does that mean except? You know what I'm saying? What does reason mean?
But again, Matthew 5:32, I think, is identical and parallel to Matthew 19. But with regard to single exception. The only exception with regard to putting away.
Well, yeah, if you put her away because of her adultery, you can't be the one who's making her commit adultery.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And, no, thank you.
Exactly.
And
why that
very important. That's why that
exception.
Right. But it says if for any reason except sexual immorality, if the man puts her away for any other reason, he causes her to commit adultery. That would include for the sake of the kingdom.
Sure would.
Because then
sure.
Where Bobby went to that, he admitted, all right, that Métis about not in this kind, and then he went to Mark chapter 10 and tried to just...
But if that is the case, then their view of 1 Corinthians 7 can't be right. Can't be right.
In my Greek English...
Right. Bob contradicts himself.
It is apart from, instead of except, is apart from a matter of fornication.
Okay.
That's my view of it. And to answer this now, the very first time Matthew 5 was used that I'm aware of in talking directly with Tom and Bobby was when Betty used it in y'all's discussion. Mm-hmm. And boy, all right, Betty. I mean, y'all may have talked about it before. You may have even told it, but all right, Betty. So they says, what about Matthew 5:32? There's no remarriage in there.
That's right.
And Bobby said, hadn't thought about that. I have to look at that.
Ooh.
Okay. Oh. Now, do you remember when it was that y'all had your
study? Yeah, December 26, 2006.
Okay, 2006. Mm-hmm. So in 2007, when Tom is in my office, I, having listened to that, make the same point. You know what his answer was? Hadn't heard that. Have to think about it. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if he forgot that Betty had already made that
statement. Well, that's probably
statement,
right.
He
probably
but he made the statement. They have never answered that.
They
have never answered it. The closest thing I've got to dealing with it since then was I say yes, and Bobby said no.
When I brought that up to Mike Willis automatically defaulted back to Matthew 19.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He ain't going to stay on Matthew 5.
Wow.
He didn't stay on Matthew 5. He said, no. He said, I said, well, what about Matthew 5? And he said, well, doesn't that say? And he defaulted to
Matthew 19.
Matthew 19.
And of course, Matthew 19.
He did that twice. He defaulted to Matthew 19.
I mean, he's like, oh, I found the key. This is, I don't know.
It's the defense mechanism of all.
I don't know where they're going to try to explain it, but I have not yet heard them try to.
If you go in there looking for an exception, you're going to find it. That's the whole point of it. If you don't recognize that it was never the rule to begin with, and that's why you preach that way, because it never was. If a rule is one man for woman for a life, and there never was to be anything but that. There is an exception, but that's not the rule. And that's how they argue, looking for an exception. Well, and that's what they're doing.
And see, I think that's this is just kind of an overall thing. I think that looking for the exception. We've talked about this at the congregation in Old Granbury Road. The exception, people are making the exceptions the rule.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, that's what they're doing.
The straw man argument. The straw man argument. Now, the straw man argument is the rule.
That's what they're doing.
And what we have in essence done is we've done exactly the same thing that the Jews did when they had the law here, mm-hmm. and then they had all their customs around the law. If you keep this, then by essence you're keeping this. We're doing the same thing when we make the exception the rule.
Can I tell you what my wife said? This is my wife's observation. She said, oh, well, Dennis, isn't that the doorpost argument?
The what?
Yeah.
The doorpost argument. Of course it is. The Jews were told they could go somebody far.
Oh, okay.
And
that's
what they're doing. It's the same staple thing in Glenn. Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. So, do you also remember in verse 10 of 1 Corinthians 7, to the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord.
Yes. They wouldn't even admit that time of I would not even admit that those were Christians. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. I mean, they're just making all kinds of things as far as, well, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, that was, he they did that. Really they did, yeah, they Bobby made a big deal about the fact that God's law on marriage is the same for Christians and non-Christians, mm-hmm. as far as these kinds of things, and, mm-hmm. and Jerry called him on it. Jerry said, "Oh, wait a minute." He said, "Now you're preaching my sermon." and he said, "He said in 1 Corinthians 7 is talking about a Christian,
So they want to get that believer non-believer situation where he's causing her not to be able to serve God." Trying to get that in there.
It's the politically correct.
Well, but again, in the context, it just doesn't make any sense.
Oh, okay. Okay. A wife is not to depart from her husband, verse 10. Period. That's what the Lord says. Mm-hmm. A wife's not to depart from her husband. But even if she does, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. See, right there, she's unmarried.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And they would admit that. Yeah. Marriage is open.
So,
but that's one of the inconsistencies.
So if she's unmarried, then what we have here is
another cause.
Because, well, in essence, without saying it, she's divorced for some reason. She's unmarried.
And they would insert 18 into that. I said, well, where are you reading into
now?
There's no divorce for the kingdom of heaven's sake.
Can't do that.
Is the unmarried that, or is the unmarried?
But even if she does, let her not remarry.
Say that again.
I didn't catch. Let her not. If let her remain unmarried. Not married again, or to another man. Let her not remarry. Let her not remarry another man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it'd have to be another man in the context.
Yeah, because we're all to be reconciled.
But so her husband. So it. So, but does the other second one doesn't necessarily mean that she's not married to her first one. Because you can divorce and remarry someone else, and you're still married to your husband or your wife. You're bound. Yeah, you're still bound. Yeah, you're still bound. But
all right, bound. But
and yeah. So we've got to be able to. What is Paul saying here? What is the Lord saying here? How do we express that so that the what? How did you put the people in the pew? What did you mark? What did you say about that?
Pew Christians.
Well, yeah, the people in the pew. How are you going to convince them?
How are we going to?
Yeah, how are we going to get them understanding? Right.
Yes.
I think First John. Everybody sure of the two? First John 2:1 parallel with this.
Well, that's your contingency passage that you that you use.
You know, it says here. Yeah. You know, do not divorce. But if you do, here's a contention. First John 2:1, do not sin. But if you do, we have an advocate with the Father. Right. That doesn't mean it's okay to sin because we have an advocate.
Have you read Maurice Barnett's argument against that?
No.
Okay, I'll share that with you. But yeah, he's saying
points to Maurice Barnett.
Yeah.
All
his,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Maurice makes a technical argument that I didn't really fully understand.
Well,
it's pretty typical for me and Maurice.
But see, that I think that's the problem where that we can all fall into is we all try to make a technical argument, and we need to keep it on the
Christian.
Keep it on my level. Everybody understands the KISS principle.
Oh yes, absolutely.
What's the last S in the KISS principle? Who's the stupid one here? I am.
Well, yeah. But
what I'm trying to do is here is on the charizo. That Matthew 19:6 word is charizo. First Corinthians 7:11 is charizo.
Yes.
See, sin, and I think I like the Dennis point out Apollo in Matthew 19:9, and charizo. She sinned there. She charizo, and I used that over and over and over again with Tommy. It just didn't.
Yeah.
And what they're saying.
But again, it looks
that's chorizo.
That's chorizo.
Okay, now
is it not pronounced correctly?
No. We're talking about the nickel, brother.
How do you pronounce it? I say with regard to pronunciation, you make it sound like you know what you're talking about.
You go, chorizo is a Mexican breakfast sausage. You mix it up with egg, it's really good in a tortilla.
Well, separate.
You don't have to know. That's how you folks can understand.
You don't want to know what's in it, though. You don't ask what's in it. You just eat it.
That's right.
With cheese. It's a breakfast taco. That's all it's about.
All right. Yeah, I went to India and talked about Nadab and Abihu, and they looked at me like they had no idea what I was talking about. And it was Nadab and Abihu. Nadab and Abihu. And I said, not Nadab and Abihu, it's Nadab and Abihu. Oh, I'm from Texas.
Abihu.
But look, in verse 10 it says not to depart. Verse 12, let him not divorce her. 13, let her not divorce him.
Yeah.
Depart, right. Divorce. Don't do it.
How is that not a
good thing? Yeah,
how many are arguing about?
So,
don't do it.
And this is interesting.
So,
Mike Willis in 1 Corinthians 7, in his commentary on 1 Corinthians 7, said she has no choice other than to heed the command or disobey. Mm-hmm. He didn't believe that anymore.
No, correct. I quoted that too.
I've looked at every single commentary that I, and admittedly I don't have a big library, but every single commentary, including the pulpit that I have in my library and in the church's library, looking for someone who would take the position that she did not sin when she did that, when she departed. And there's not a single one that did. I'm convinced that the only reason why anybody would indicate from this that there was no sin involved is because they're trying to extrapolate to their eisegesis, their reading into what their view. Every, you know, and that's what I was I was indicating, wait a second, you guys are coming up with this. Nobody else has ever in the history of the world taught this.
But if she does,
then she didn't do what he said don't do.
Exactly. But
hey, there it is. If she doesn't, she did what he told her not to do.
But it also says that she is to remain in that state or be reconciled.
And that's where Tom would point out.
Yeah, and the call
stay
is.
As you are. She said, stay as you are. Is she in a sinful state? She's going to be lost. She's going to lose her soul.
And so
she sinned. But again, you have to understand in this situation that when she destroyed the marriage by departing, her eternal condition cannot be dependent upon that individual.
Yeah, exactly. If I don't want to reconcile with you, I'm not going to reconcile with you. You're lost. You did this to me.
So that's what they're claiming. That it just can't be.
So she repents of that. Attempts reconciliation.
Yeah.
But if she cannot be reconciled, then she has to remain.
And this is where there's a little bit of fuzziness on my part. Is that is it required of her to attempt reconciliation since Paul told her she'd remain unmarried?
Well, there is the order there.
I understand that it possibly could be intimated.
But
I don't know that for sure.
But this is not a call. This is not a call for the husband or the wife to say, there's irreconcilable differences. We're just going to part our ways, and I'm going to continue being a Christian, just for the sake of being a Christian.
Because I want to go to heaven.
Yeah. Is does that fit there?
Well, I'm of a view that you never can say before sin, well, I'm just going to sin this one time.
Dennis had a situation where that happened, where he was privy to that, where we just not going to live together anymore. We're going to divorce, and I'm going to continue being a Christian.
But
you'll find this interesting because we're talking about Roy Faust and his wife Edna. Edna didn't want to live with Roy anymore. She said, I divorce you. She didn't say it. She filed in a court of law. He pleaded with her not to do so. He knew that if she did, that he would have no right to remarry and that he would live a celibate life. Okay? So she said, well, I can always repent.
But why don't we have the rest of the story for him? This is
several years ago when I was in Austin. This took place. Now I knew the story because I'd been in Abilene at North Park when Roy had explained this to all of us, what the situation was. And so I went to Jesse Jenkins because I knew that Edna was attending services at Cedar Park.
Okay.
And I knew she was there and I knew what their story was. And I went to Jesse Jenkins, who was a preacher, and I knew Jesse for years. And I said, Jesse, what is Edna doing here? And he said, well, why shouldn't she be here? I said, well, brother, she put her husband away for a cause other than fornication, number one. And she said, well, the church, he said, you just need to go talk to her. That's his out. So I said, okay, brother, I will, because I know her. So I did. Called her up. Said, sure, come on over. And she was actually at work at JCPenney. Okay, the guy in there, and I said, now, Edna, Roy told me something about your marriage, divorce, what happened, but I want to hear your side of it. And that's the way I approached it. And she said, well, he wanted to remain married. I just didn't want to live with him anymore, so I just divorced him, and said, now, and I said, well then, Edna, what, don't you think you're in sin? Oh no, I repented that a long time ago. And I said, no, sister, you can't repent unless you reconcile according to 1 Corinthians 7:10. And she said, oh well, she said, I'm not worried about that. And she was very cool. I'm not worried about that. She said, because Jesse Jenkins agrees with me, and the Church of Cedar Park has accepted me in their fellowship, and I know that I'm right. Well, hello. And so I went back to them. I said, now this is what's happened, Jesse. We spoke no more.
Yeah, there was no repentance there.
They were done.
Do you see that? That's probably an application because what's going to happen? I was divorced for the kingdom of heaven's sake, and they said they are not going to ask any questions.
Exactly, brother.
Somebody come who I'd known from before, and he's got custody of his kids, and so the assumption is that she's wrong. Well, come to find out concerning other witnesses, hey, you better not trust what he said. And the elders over here, go check with them, okay? Go check with them and so on. Oh yeah, you can't trust to what he says. And so he wanted to place membership. He was marrying somebody close by. And so I brought it for the men and more. And it almost seems like every providentially, every time he'd come, we'd talk about divorce, I guess. He'd only come like once a month or every couple of months, and I was warned.
Hey, so
I
got around to that subject.
And then he was going to talk with the men. I talked about keeping the church pure, and he was just so mad and frustrated and upset that he was going to claim that she did this and she did that. Thankfully, the brethren were willing to stand up for what was right, because it would have been a mess with him, because he's a preacher's kid, and he knows what to say.
Dennis's situation. Dennis's situation with Fouts, right?
Fouts, yes.
Okay. It seems Jesse Jenkins and the church at Cedar Park would lump this into 1 Corinthians 7, verse 11.
Obviously, they did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do we see a problem with that, or can we agree with that?
I see a huge problem with that.
I'm looking at each one of you to see.
Edna actually said, I remember something else Edna said. Edna said, she said, well, she said, brother, I'm never going to remarry. I said, sister, that has nothing to do with anything.
And if someone is coming up, that is not even under consideration here. This is a stance. Do not. But if you do, I like that. Do not. But if you do, 1 John 2:1.
That's a good way to put it.
Don't make it worse.
Don't make it worse.
If you're going to fornicate, don't have an abortion.
Exactly. Yeah, see that.
Yeah, that's a good example.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Don't sin,
but
I'm pregnant.
Yeah, see, that's worst scenario that came to my mind is church, don't have sex, but if you do, use a condom.
Well, the whole point is,
I didn't feel like I could say that before, but I mean, it's again. But if a parent tells a child that, don't have sex, but if you do, use a condom. Are they saying it's all right to have sex?
I think so. But you're not teaching abstinence. What you teaching?
Yeah, it's just fun, right?
I had that right about that. Not just say sex. No sex. Don't have. Say no. That was the campaign. Remember that?
Say no.
Oh, no. You're not concentrating on safety, you know. Well, what would you do? Okay, so there is a way to get away with it, but it will be safely.
And this is a part of this.
Floating in the urinal at the church building at the Highland Church of Christ in Abilene.
Oh, my goodness.
As a part of this scenario, though, let's do another scenario here as part of 1 Corinthians 7:10, because this is why I said there's a little bit of fuzziness in my thinking, or not being sure in this regard. You have a woman just opposite from this. This woman is, she leaves her husband just like Edna did, but it wasn't with that view that I can always repent of it, you know, and then I did repent of it, you know, kind of like beforehand. This is a woman who was rebelling.
Okay.
She totally departs from him and all. Later on, she acknowledges, oh man, I should not have done that. That is sin. I have sinned. There's true repentance there.
Okay.
Sin.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, we all understand that reconciliation is not always possible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But if there has been time that's passed and such, and I've seen everything, and I recognize, I acknowledge, I'm so sorry I did that to him. I'm going to apologize to him and repent. Is it required of her to say, not only do I apologize and I have sinned and I acknowledge that and all, but I want to get back together? Or does the statement, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled, allow her to remain unmarried? Is that a consequence?
Why not?
This repentance requires... I understand that. I understand repentance requires
reconciliation.
It's like you can't rob a bank and then say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I robbed the bank. Keep the money." I understand that. I recognize.
I'm glad you do, brother.
But I'm just saying.
There's a First Community Bank right down the street.
That looks chilling, John, brother.
But again, you know, I just see the phrase, "Let her remain unmarried," and the recognition that.
No, I think you're right.
What has happened, the water under the bridge and everything, that thing is just absolutely destroyed.
Well, I,
you can't.
But she still is.
No, but she still. I'm going to say,
I'll come back with you.
I mean that. That I can see.
If she does what she can.
She does what she can, and obviously. But I mean,
well,
in my mind, that's not. But anyway, that's your right. A good question.
Well, those things. That's the obvious part.
Yeah.
And that's why. At the very least, that's why that's there. She must remain unmarried because she can't.
How many sermons we've preached on the compounded sins of failing to obey Hebrews 10:25? You didn't give your means. You didn't sing. You didn't take the Lord's.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the same, or at least similar here, is that in a refusal to reconcile, mm-hmm. think of all the passages you would also be violated.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
That's a good point. Right. Good point.
That's
right. Good point.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Mm-hmm. But in the end, it really comes down to when you ask the question, the thing that came to my mind instantly, but what does God want?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what always comes to my mind. What does God want? I don't know what the woman wants, what the guy wants, what society wants. What does God want? That's the question. See, I think I have to approach it every time that way. And maybe that makes me stricter or maybe crazy. I don't know.
Anybody got a coin?
Well, keep it light, brother. Keep it light.
Bobby and Tom have argued, though, that passage cannot be as we interpret it to be, because if that were the case, then reconciliation would be required. Then, because if there is not reconciliation, there is not repentance, and that person would be lost.
If you repent, if you truly repent, then along with that repentance, you're going to try to reconcile. If you're truly repenting and you're sorry for what you did, you're going to try to reconcile. Now, if that's not possible, obviously that's where the she must remain unmarried, from what I can tell, comes in.
Yeah.
But you, if you repent from a true mind, then you're going to try to reconcile. From what I can tell, that's what repentance is.
And speaking of that, the Kalalasa argument, because I used
it. You used it, and Jerry, you got it from Jerry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry, the one argument? It's a great argument, and I've
reconciled.
I've heard it from you twice, and can't get it in my mind. So say, I don't remember it at all.
The word Kalalasa is only used like 4 times in the New Testament.
Okay.
And it's always the guilty towards the innocent.
Right.
All the other times it's used in the New Testament, it's used. And not saying that.
Interesting.
Isn't that a good argument? If it's valid,
that's interesting.
Yeah, reconciled to God. And that's the way the
guilty towards the innocent.
Guilty towards the innocent.
Never with God.
Definitely toward us. Not only that, Pat, that, you know, see Corinzo, but the guilty towards the innocent.
Have you thought about the other side of all of this?
Actually, I haven't looked it up for myself.
I don't think he had heard that because they were
that the woman knows the man is an adulterer, but she just goes along with it. You think she's okay?
That we're going along
with that?
It's the responsibility of sin.
I'm not talking about he repents. I'm talking about he is a fornicator. I mean, he is an adulterer. And she goes along with it. She's aware of
it. Okay, we have open
doors. Does she have to put it? No, I don't think she does. According to scriptures. But what is she saying? Is she studying?
Oh, you've got it right there. Oh, you've got yours up too.
What's she saying to the community? What's she saying to the church?
Okay.
It's a bad example of nothing else.
There's all kinds of wrong involved.
There's just all kinds of wrong involved.
If not the actual act of doing, that's not wrong.
Did they translate it the same?
I really need to write that.
Steve, that argument would make perfect sense. The other, another way to translate that passage is if you be departed from.
Okay.
Instead of if you do the departing, is if you be departed from. Is another way, alternate way to translate the
verse. 1 Corinthians 7:11.
Here are the other passages where it's used.
The guilty toward the innocent, not the innocent toward the guilty.
Reconciled, we were reconciled.
Be reconciled unto the Lord, says God.
Reconciled, blessed and sealed by Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mark and Dennis, have you heard that? Have you all understood that it's an alternate way of reading 1 Corinthians 7:10-11? If you be departed from,
Yeah,
and if so, then that view of the reconcile would fit in with that interpretation.
Yes, it would. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it really would, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys, there's several of y'all that know much more about the Greek than that. Is that a valid argument?
Yeah.
So don't look at me.
Well, just the concept of the reconciliation being guilty
to things. Right. It's reflexive. Right. It would.
That sounds right. In the context, it seems right. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Context really.
Could I ask just note before I'll hear? We've talked a couple hours or so about this, and not that we're through. I'm not saying this is over. I'm just saying are we all in agreement with everything that has that we've discussed? And we see this as the truth. And that the, there's not any anybody going, oh, I can't go with those guys. Is anybody feeling that way?
Everybody well,
personally.
Can I get on this side of the table?
Just a matter of principle. Right? Don't, here,
right? Don't mind me, my kids.
Are we responding like vacuums here right now? You know, because it's good.
I'm up the guy with the gun.
I would like to share some ideas from the Greek that I think are helpful.
Sure, please do.
Posit something that is useful for us. I think it's helpful for us to define things in terms, in scriptural terms, and Stan is exactly right. That if you go down the etymology trails, you will get yourself in trouble because you just get in an intellectual argument with intellectual snobs.
And a source.
Well, you will. It's just
the
You don't want to do that at all. But you can show a consistency in the way that the scripture uses words that I think is instructive. I think it's good for us to posit very simply, here are the words that are being used in a certain way to say a very specific thing. So, like, first of all, when you go to Matthew 19, and the Lord said, for this reason a man leaves his father and mother and clings to his wife, and the two become one flesh, and what God has joined together, let man not separate. And there's specific words there. What he's saying there about sticking to the wife is to be glued onto or to be cemented together. The two of them are glued together, they're stuck together. And so what God, but then he goes and uses another term in verse 6, what God has yoked together, as in joined together, man should not separate from one another. And that's that porous word where you're saying, talk about space. Well, space makes perfect sense there because they're cemented.
And now they're not cemented anymore.
There's space between them when they're no longer cemented together. That those words make perfect sense. What's interesting is that the opposite of that is over there in 1 Corinthians 6, where he talks about being joined to a prostitute as fornication. In 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 16, he said, who joins himself to a prostitute becomes one flesh with her, for it is written, the two shall become one flesh. It's a direct reference to Matthew 19 and verse 6, and also to the creation. So that what he's saying it there very plainly is that fornication is to join yourself to somebody else that you don't belong to. And that's what it is. The joining to somebody else that you don't belong to is what fornication is. Which is why looking at pornography, while it's wrong and it's sinful and it leads to evil things, that's not fornication because there's nobody else there. That's a picture.
But you can still go to hell for it.
Yeah, you can still go to hell for it. You're still doing damage to
your words. Right. See these two words, we read it all the time. Galatians 5, verse 11, what is, or 19 rather, what does it say? The works of the flesh are that's the problem. Adultery, and then fornication, and then lasciviousness, licentiousness. I'm just that's just the birth of the trap. And I know, as we all know that lasciviousness is not pornea. Just
right.
Isn't.
That's right.
So anybody trying to put their husband or wife away for looking at nasty pictures on the
no, that's not right.
It's wrong. But that is not. But that is not what the Lord was talking about.
The cases of this are being our preachers having to deal with.
Oh yeah, I know they are. And they are the words.
Paul Roberts' brother-in-law had that same thing happen in his family.
Yeah.
And they have to support the daughter now, who's moved back with Carl Allen to live with him for 20 years, and it's over pornography on the computer. She said she put him away because of adultery, because he was masturbating at that. And so when she found that out,
that's not being joined to another person.
That's
why he's saying joined to another person. In other words, sexual intercourse would be the better way to put it, because that's really what he's talking about. Be it with a dead body, necrophilia, or be it with the beast, bestiality, or I don't know what man thinks up next.
Children.
But you're messing with something there. You know, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So there's a difference.
That's an important thing, I think. So we posit that very clearly and very simply in such a way that it deals with every scenario that comes up. The way that all the other things that we do in the Bible do. We set forth a standard, and then we can deal with the scenarios as they come up. And just like modern dancing, you know, that didn't exist 150 years ago. People didn't do that kind of thing. So,
no,
is there a verse that says, "Thou shalt not dance the Macarena"? No, because it didn't exist. But there are verses that are very clear about lasciviousness, and that's what this is. We would do the same thing here. So now, the interesting thing is, when you think about Matthew 19 and verse 6, he said, "What God has joined together, let no person separate." That is, whoever, for any reason, introduces a separation in that cement, who takes the two of them apart, that person is sinning. Whoever is doing that,
that person is
sinning. The person who is at fault for this marriage no longer being together is a sinner, regardless, Matthew 19 and verse 6. For whatever reason it was that you put a separation between you and your spouse, you sinned. That was wrong.
And you're in
sin. It
never
happened. And you're in sin.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that I think we need to just take that really clear. It's real clear. And you put it together with Hebrews 13 and 4, right? That marriage bed is undefiled.
Fornicators
and adulterers, I will judge. And fornicators are those who are joined to somebody they don't belong to, but are themselves not married. Adulterers are those who are joined to somebody they don't belong to, but they are married.
That's right, and
that's
makes that clear distinction because all adultery is fornication, but not all fornication is adultery,
right?
Which is the way we have to understand it. I mean, it's tough getting the audience to understand that, but really, you understand, because if a man is in fact is in a homosexual relationship, his wife may put him away for the cause of fornication.
That's right.
That's fornication.
Yes, correct. It is.
Right. Or with an animal, whatever.
Yes.
That's what it is. Not just whatever. It's specifically that. Mm-hmm. No. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, and I think it's real helpful for us to just set forth in simple terms. This is very, we can posit exactly what God has in mind. It should be the case. How they stick together. There shouldn't be space between them. They should do no violence to their own relationship. And that's, I mean, Matthew 19 is just an echo of Malachi 2.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord didn't say, "I hate the bill of divorcement," although obviously he hated that too because he didn't let them do it. I mean, he didn't want them to do it.
Moses said,
"I hate the sending her away."
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's just like the Sermon on the Mount. You know, the law says don't kill anybody. I say don't hate anybody. The law says don't commit fornication. I say don't lust.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same thing. The law says write her a bill of divorcement for her protection. I say don't introduce a separation between you and your wife.
Still
it's a law written on the heart.
Don't even go there.
Oh, yeah, that's a law written on the heart. That's exactly right.
That would be a very simple thing to put forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And probably answers 1 Corinthians 7. I think you're right. It's like 1 John 2 and 1, right? It's, she shouldn't be departing, but if she has done so, well, here are your options.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, a preacher was telling this as truth. He said he was trying to teach in a Bible class that what you just said, that, you know, adultery is fornication, but not fornication.
Adultery.
This one old fellow spoke up and said, "Preacher, I tried them both and I couldn't tell any difference."
Well, Tom Robbins, I'll have you know,
was
asked in his lectureship to preach on the subject of fornication, and the first thing out of his mouth he got up there, you would know this, though, he said, "Now, brother, I've done a lot of research on this."
Wait a minute.
Personally.
What is that about?
Many hours.
He told that on himself.
Okay. He told that on himself.
Here we are at this situation. What? When I canceled the meeting on the 14th of January, it was after talking to three or four guys. Dennis's daughter did have premature twin baby boys. He was going to do about half the program that on the 14th. I think it was three men said they couldn't come. It was a bad time. I've had some stuff going on with family in Odessa. My mother-in-law had to be put in the nursing home. She's got dementia. And so I was convenient. It worked out convenient to say, well, if we're going to have a problem, because we have not collaborated, frankly. We had to do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So to see that we're all on the same page. And because I had the request from three men, Leroy, Kleiss, as well as Bobby and Tom, to come. It's not that they're forbidden to come. but we were not ready for them to come.
Right.
And so here's the thing. We're going to have another meeting. We're not going to stop our meetings here for the whole group
right.
because of these guys.
Right.
And we've had some good...
Can take more than this. By that time, maybe I'll drop most of my weight. No,
when we have the next meeting, they will want to come to that too. So we will invite them. Right? They've asked to be put on the list. Is that okay with y'all for them to come? It's been just us. Well, it's not really just us. We bring people, you know, and that's fine. That's nobody's forbidden to come. But we've had a certain mindset since we got together that we're here for encouragement. We're here to build each other up, to give each other confidence in the work that we do, not to feel alone in the work that we do. And I hope that we have been able to do that, and I don't want that to stop. But it's got to be enriching to us spiritually. And we're not against dealing with error like this when it has to be done. I think we all feel strongly about that.
Right.
So is there some kind of strategy that's necessary when we do invite them and they do come? Who knows whether they'll come with Tom's back problems. He's in the hospital now.
Oh,
Bobby's in
the hospital. Yes, he's surgery tomorrow.
Surgery on his back. He can't move without terrible.
He was in that car accident in
way back in the 70s.
In September he was in a car accident. And the airbag hit him in
did it break up his fusion?
It's a lot. They're going to have to go in there with a scope and clear out.
It's not a major surgery, but it's serious. He can't move. He can't leave the hospital until they do it.
Is that true?
So I don't know really how much that will be a problem, but we need to be ready for that when it does present itself. It probably will.
Well, y'all are all aware of the fact Leroy agrees with them, Doctor.
Yes, no doubt.
Yes, unfortunately, we know that.
I really don't feel like Bobby will be comfortable in defending or coming and advocating his position without Tom being there.
I think you're probably right.
I think you're right about that. Oh, yeah, you're right.